Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Lloyd Ball, and you're on the net live.
Ryan Malar, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Boy, oh boy, the people are pumped today. Welcome, everybody, to the Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com, 18th of April, 2011. Thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here. We've got a great show in store for you today, but we are lacking a few members of the normal Net Live crew here in studio. Reed is trying to win the finals. He's trying to get to the finals in Russia and get some dollar bills. GeekCrest, he's got to pay the bills, so we're going to have him join us online here. He's going to call in. He's going to be part of the program that way. I'm going to be here hanging out in the studio as I always am, broken, sick. Otherwise, I'm still here. And JR, DJ Roche, is not going to be here because he's in Turks and Caicos or something. He's out vacationing. I think he's out for a wedding. So we'll see him again next week. We will have the group back again next week. So we did have to go to the bullpen. We pulled in one of our all-time leading call-in guys behind a couple of others, but most recently he's been calling in every week, giving us the lowdown on stuff that may or may not relate to volleyball. So we figured we'd give him a whole program to get after it. Matt Boyce, welcome to the Net Live as a guest host.
Thank you.
Don't sound so excited.
This is a pinnacle in my life today, and I'm keeping my collar open and my blood pressure down, and really just going to try to be as good of a support team for you, Barney, as I possibly can.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. And we do have on the line also possibly commuting to meet Jeff Daniels and film something this afternoon for the Dodgers or the Lakers or somebody else here in the Los Angeles sports area, Chris McGee. Thanks for making the effort to call in. Geeter.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Barney. I think Matt Boyce is the perfect fill-in host. I feel a little bit like Wally Pipp today. Do you know who that is, Barney?
I don't.
Wally Pipp decided to take a day off. He was a little sick, and he played first base. And Lou Gehrig filled in for him that day and went on a 2,130 consecutive game streak, which was a record until Cal Ripken beat it.
Yeah, you're right down the same path I was thinking of. I was wondering if you were a little bit concerned that Boyce was going to bring it better than you, if he was going to out-geeter-geeter.
Well, I'll tell you what. I hope he does. It would be great to get fired from this show.
You can stop getting parking tickets anytime. That would be fine with your wife, Jeff.
Yeah,
all right,
my bank account would actually go up.
We do have a big program planned for you today. We have Rick Dunitz from the Side Out Foundation, the executive director. You may have seen their information around, their slogan, Dig Pink. He's going to come in and talk about cancer research and fundraising, their efforts within the volleyball community. Also, D3 Men's Championship. The D3 Men's Championship happened this past weekend up at Nazareth College in Rochester, New York, and the home Soaring Eagles, the hosts, Nazareth College, took down the championship, so we're going to talk to head coach Cal Wicken about that event, about his team, and really about the whole D3 scene on the men's side. It's about to get a big change as the NCAA takes over. We also have Albert Hanneman of the National Volleyball League. He's going to come in and talk again about developments within his organization and the beach in general, this continuing storyline of how the beach will shake out this year and in years to come. A lot of information there. So we'll kick off this week with a note about someone who's been on the show quite frequently, a good friend of the program, Stacy Sikora, libero for the women's national team. She was involved in a bus crash last week with her team down in Brazil. Most players receive minor injuries and treatment on the scene, but Stacy hit her head extremely hard somehow inside the bus, or something hit her, and she ended up in a medically induced coma for 3 days down there in a hospital in Brazil. Fortunately, the update about Stacy is that she is now conscious. They've brought her out, and the swelling in her head reduced enough that she could be brought out of the sedation, and now is speaking to the doctors and apparently is expected to make a full recovery. So certainly we're excited to hear that news after what sounded like a very bad situation. And I'm actually surprised it doesn't happen more often, that there are bus crashes, plane crashes, other things involving teams as they travel together. Not only here in the United States, but worldwide, there are just hundreds and hundreds of teams, thousands of teams traveling. And I think about a lot of the different accidents that are famous here in the United States. In 1961, the entire United States figure skating team was killed on its way to World Championships in Prague, Czechoslovakia, on a plane crash that was a plane that was headed from New York City to Belgium. Of course, the Marshall, We Are Marshall, the movie, I think, made about that time period. The 1970 plane crash, 75 members of the football team killed in that crash. And then the Oklahoma State basketball plane crash in 2001, killing, I think it was five or six members of the association along with three players off of that team. Just recently commemorated on ESPN. I watched some interesting stuff about that. And having traveled myself in a variety of different airlines in different countries and buses, and one in particular, I remember a Poland trip that we arrived at the next hotel ahead of the Polish team by about 2 hours because we had a crazy bus driver and we're streaking down a two-lane highway into oncoming logging trucks and kind of just getting out of the way of logging trucks, just really scary. And I think of a plane ride in Argentina where we're making a harder bank turn than I've ever seen in a passenger plane. And just there's a lot of travel goes on that you don't have a lot of control over, and you don't know what the controls are on some of these buses and planes in other countries. And quite frankly, I'm glad to have survived, and the odds are not great, but I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. Dieter, any thoughts?
Well, you know Barney and Matt, you were part of this too. You know, when you play men's college volleyball, you're traveling in a bus all the time, whether it's up to Stanford, University of Pacific, you're going 5, 6, 7 hours. In a bus, you know, we used to drive in this Mata bus. No one's wearing seatbelts. You're walking around. I mean, you think of what could have happened. And I'm surprised, like you, that doesn't happen more, especially bad weather situations and stuff like that. And, you know, every time I'm on a bus with a lot of kids, whether it's when I was back in the days when I was teaching or whether I'm coaching, like driving the vans this weekend up in Reno, man, I'm extra cautious because it is on your mind, especially now that I have kids. I think about it a lot.
Boys, how much in the club scene is there talk about, whether with your wife's club or with your mom's club, about safety and the kids when they're traveling?
I think there's a lot more butt covering now with you know, things, liability waivers and stuff like that. But we, you know, I know like for Geeter and the Shack, they drive to a lot of tournaments. We typically fly to a lot of tournaments. A lot of the reason for that is to, you know, avoid the risk and stuff like that. So yeah, there you go right there. I mean, you pay more for the peace of mind.
Yeah, there's no question about it. We actually started changing this year and, you know, flying to Vegas tournament. We used to drive up. Now we flew up. So it definitely agree that the more time goes on, the more you think about it, the more you hear about accidents, you definitely want the safer route. If it costs a little bit more, then you do it.
Dieter, you were up in Reno this weekend. I assume that you flew up there. And I heard something about perhaps you won something. I remember mentioning it when we were talking, at least not multiple times.
I'm going to tell you right now, the mayor is probably going to give Jensen and I a key to the city. We won a national championship in 05 in Reno. We won the qualifier in Reno last year. JOs were in Reno last year. We won those. And then yesterday, we repeated. We had the same final as last year, played Vision, and it was probably one of the best final matches I've ever been a part of. A lot of times in club, when you're in a 3-4 day tournament, at the very end, you know, everyone's kind of dead tired, and the finals are usually kind of medium. Both teams already had a bid. It was one of the best games I've ever been a part of. We won 29-27 in the first, and we were down 25-24, we're down 26-25, and we were down 27-26. We tied it up at 27. Jane Croson went back and had two untouched aces, jump serves to win, and then we won in game two. So probably one of the best matches that I've been a part of. Jason Mansfield, who coached at Stanford, and Cassidy Lichtman are the coaches for Vision. Cassidy said during game two, she looked at Jason. She's like, Jason, he's like, what? She's like, we're hitting 413 and losing. What do you think Sportchak's hitting? I mean, they were hitting .413. It's not like they played poorly. They played unreal. So it was two heavyweights going at it, and all the best players were playing great, and it really was fun. We got a bid. We already had it. So did Vision. Laguna got a bid, which is great. SoCal represented. Rancho Valley finally got their bid. They're one of the best teams in the country. And Force from NorCal got a bid. So it was a great day for California volleyball.
Talk a little more about this bid process. Boys, you had some notes here on this bid process and how it all works to get the JOs.
Yeah, and I'm going to do my best to keep it positive, so I'm going to start off by making a positive statement. Congratulations, Chris, for winning your second bid tournament. And I'd like to repeat that again. You've won your second bid tournament. Why? Why are they called bid tournaments if the whole point is to get a bid and you already got one and then you have to go to another one so you can help build your overall ranking? And then my wife's not home for two weekends in a row.
I'll tell you, Matt, because you have to sign up for these qualifiers in advance, and a lot of times you want to probably go to two. Some teams go to three because you want more chances to get a bid because they only give out three bids. Some tournaments they only give out two. So if you go to a tournament like we did this weekend in NorCal, and so did Vision and so did City Beach, we already had bids. So we got into the top six. The other three teams that got into the top six got their bids too. They didn't even have to play off for them. So, you know, not everyone gets a bid. That's why, you know, TCA from Huntington Beach is in Baltimore right now, and they just got their bid. Long Beach, Mizuno, Joy Furbringer's team, they are in, Baltimore, I think, and they just got a bid. So, you know, teams are traveling to get their bids. There's qualifiers all over the place. And the question always is, you guys, in the club world, are there too many qualifiers? I mean, you know, nowadays you can, you know, go all over the place. You know, we had teams from SoCal a couple weeks ago miss a tournament in SoCal, fly up to Spokane, and had a qualifier there. The thing is, you can't go too many. It gets really expensive. Travel's insane. So what we do at Sportchak, we do the L.A. qualifier. So we stay home, and then we travel to one. And it is good, even if you have your bid already. You get to see the competition you're going to play. If you do well, it definitely helps your seeding, and all that stuff matters. You know what I mean, Matt? So your wife's got to go, bud. I'm sorry.
No, that's well put. I obviously need to go back to the pencil to paper to build in a cost for a babysitter and also funding for the new support group I'm starting, BSCV, Battered Spouses of Club Volleyball. First meeting in your living room, actually, in 1 week, Peter.
My wife would like to be a part of that. I'm telling you, when I got home last night at 10:30, Millie is sleeping on the couch because she wanted to go to bed till I got home. The baby, wide awake on Jess's lap, she handed me the baby, gave me a kiss, and I'm really glad you're home. My wife was definitely the MVP of the weekend. She didn't have to side out one time, but to let me go up to Reno and support me and for 4 days solo with the brand new baby and Millie, got to give her credit, Barney. I know you couldn't have done it.
Dude, it's definitely what's going to happen. I used to come home from volleyball trips, and you walk in the door, and it's not high or anything. You just get handed this thing that's crying. Like, what do I do with this? Where do I put my bag? It's just... It's tough being the parent at home, especially at the ages you're at where you have the newborn who needs all the attention. You have the other child who, you know, in your case, what, Millie's 3 years old? Is that correct?
Yeah.
I mean, mine are 2 years apart, and it's the same thing where that 2 year, 3 year old just needs attention and wants to continue playing the same way they were playing with you before the new baby showed up. So a huge challenge, and I really hope that BSCV, Battered Spouses of Club Volleyball, is able to help Jess in what's happening while you're out of town.
Yeah, and I have a 3-year-old. I have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. And what about my time? Sorry, I'm a little choked up.
Hey, buddy, you don't get time anymore.
Hey, you're still a person too, Matt. Don't forget that. Don't let that get lost in the shuffle.
I'm making that. That's a bullet point, actually, for the first group conversation. Thank you.
Oh man! So if you are a bad spouse of club volleyball, you know that you can come to Southern California for the next meeting. Yes, Geeter.
I'd love for people in the chat room to give me their top three Jeff Daniels movies. I have to interview him today for Dodgers Live. I don't know. I think he's got a new play out or something with what's the name from Sopranos. So people maybe on the chat room can help me out a little bit. I know Dumb and Dumber is Matt's top movie for sure.
Yeah, Mutt Cuts. You don't get anywhere past Mutt Cuts. The van driving around with the ears hanging off the side of the thing, you know, I got room for two on this hog. All those classic lines from Dumb and Dumber. I don't think it got any better for Jeff Daniels, but maybe somebody else can think of another movie. Matt, you got anything on Jeff Daniels?
No, I already gave Geeter the Chris Farley interview from Saturday Night Live.
Oh my goodness.
He's been in probably over 50 movies when you Google him. I mean, the guy's been in a lot of movies.
Yeah, I keep thinking of Jeff Bridges instead of Jeff Daniels. I can't picture too many Jeff Daniels movies, but I can picture a lot of Jeff Bridges movies where he's acting through his nose. Like, breathing through your nose is not acting, as far as I'm concerned, but he was okay in Tron, and even the new Tron. Well, D3 Championship, we mentioned it. Nazareth won this past week. They defeated Springfield College at the Final Four in Nazareth, up in Rochester, New York. Really good event. We're going to have Cal Wickens later on to talk about it, so we'll save some of that discussion. We did have the club national scene in Houston. Club nationals happened about a week ago. We did mention it. And we have Jeremiah Tiffin of Hill College is going to call in with a report, tell us about it. He said it was kind of off the hook. 2,000 people going crazy. It was just an awesome scene. So Jeremiah is going to give us a call and talk about that. Also, a note for Pepperdine. We've been beating Pepperdine up pretty good about their poor performance on the men's side. But the Beach College Championships, or Beach College Challenge, I think it was, Collegiate Challenge, happened this past week. And Pepperdine dominated. The Pepperdine women were in the finals with both teams. So that was great news for Pepperdine. And this is no surprise, really, is it, Matt, with Nina Matthews at the helm?
No. I worked her camp one time with my wife, Melissa, who played for Nina. And half, I didn't even know until the first day, half of the her college camp in the summer is indoor and the other half's on the beach. And first session after the beach day, I threw the time. In fact, I think I started crying and Chris was just laughing because he knew how tough it was.
Yeah. They took down USC. I think UCSB was in it. And not only do they have nine over there training, but you also have Marcio Ciccoli on staff who coaches Misty and Carey. So, and Tim Jensen. So you got a pretty good, you know, beach volleyball staff over there. And we all know Nino is one of the great champions of all time in the sport of beach volleyball. So, you know, the kids she recruits love playing it. The camp is not just indoors, Matt said, but it's beach as well. It's one of the most popular camps in the country. And it's a good time. So Pepperdine definitely embracing sand volleyball.
Yeah, Matt had a good question that I wonder about. Will sand volleyball spill over for the men? Could you have a men's collegiate championship now? Should you? In the interest of gender equity, shouldn't we have a men's collegiate championship?
Yeah, absolutely. Why can't we?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I mean, it couldn't take that much to have it.
No, the nets are there. The balls don't cost too much. You could probably get a few on sale from the old AVP. And that's it.
I don't know if that was necessary.
What? Sorry about that. Sorry about that, Peter. I know that hits you in the heart every time I say it.
I know.
Hey, we do have on the line here, we do have Jeremiah Tiffin calling in from Hill College in Houston. He's been at the club championships for a number of years and giving us a call. Let us know what it was all about. Jeremiah, how are you?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for calling in. Tell us a little bit about last week's off-the-hook event.
Well, you know, I've been going there for about 8 or 9 years, and I've always been going with Baylor University with first playing with them and then coaching the girls' team. And it is unlike anything else I've ever seen. It's just a phenomenal volleyball weekend.
What is it that makes it so phenomenal? Is it the enthusiasm for people that are there, that they so want to be there? I mean, these are teams that pay their own way. They set up their own practices, schedule their own gym time, and really create the team themselves without outside influence. Is it all that coming together and really the end of the year event for them?
Yeah, it's the fact that, you know, all these players, you know, pay to be there. You know, there's no one helping them out. They play it because they love volleyball, and we get to go down there and we either coach ourselves. I remember when I played, we didn't have a coach, and there's tons of guys teams there that just play because they love it. And, you know, work hard and try and be successful. And then when we get there, there's the competition aspect of it, and we love playing against each other and all that stuff. But then it's just fun there and being with people from all across the country and just hanging out, too. I know we had a bunch of bunch of guys' teams come to watch our girls' teams and cheer us on all weekend, and we did the same. And it's just it's an absolute blast. There's nothing like it in volleyball.
Hey, Jeremiah, it's Geeter. Can you tell us some of the teams that are there, some of the teams that have had success over the last couple of years, some of the more dominant program?
Sure. I would say right now, as far as men's goes, the dominant program is Wisconsin Oshkosh. They won this year. They've been, you know, Final Four past few years. Really good program. They beat Notre Dame this year in the final. And let's see, Illinois is usually up there pretty good. And there's been some California teams in the past. Fresno State's been pretty solid. They won the national championship a couple years ago. But it's from all over. You got small schools, you got big schools, and it's wide open every year. I know Indiana was Final Four this year. They're a really good team. It's just all over the place.
You know, Kevin and I talk a lot about on the show, Jeremiah, about, well, you know, what if, because, you know, he and I were part of men's volleyball, and so was Matt, and so was Reed, so it has a special place in our heart. What if all these programs had Division I teams? But this sounds like this is kind of what we're talking about. It's small schools and big schools battling it out. So it's like March Madness, it sounds like.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just 3 days of intense competition. I mean, it's basically, it's like a qualifier. But just as competitive, but a whole lot more fun with just everyone there having a good time. And I can't even begin to describe how amazing the last day is. It's just single elimination, and then we all come back. I mean, they had stands for about 2,000, 2,500 people for the men's championship match that night, totally packed before the match even started. Just amazing atmosphere. Can't describe it. Just amazing.
So there was a little bit of drinking going on, is what we heard with the crowd. That the crowd was pretty riled up and excited and into the match.
Just a little bit of drinking, I would say just a little bit. But, man, they were totally into it. And, you know, that, like I was talking about with Oshkosh being a traditional big-time program, no one wanted them to win. They had their little cheering section, but, man, the boos and everyone was cheering for Notre Dame. It was great. But, yeah, just a little bit of drink, and it had been going on for a few hours before they got there.
Is next year's event already set? Where is it going to happen?
As far as I know, they have not announced it yet. I just went and checked the website today, but they should. Hopefully they'll be announcing that in the next couple months or so.
What are the chances of the Net Live being out there next year for that weekend?
I think you guys need to be out there. I think that'd be great. You guys would have a blast. Get to meet all these guys. You guys need to be there.
Jeremiah and Matt Boyce, do you have – two players with NCAA or JC experience?
In the past, I have had that on my girls' team, and we've been successful with it. We didn't have it this year. But, yeah, there's lots of teams that have, you know, one or two. I think Fresno State won a couple years ago with a transfer from some California school. So, yeah, it's common. It's not too common, but the better teams usually have one or two.
And my real point in asking is because I think Chris and I are going to enroll and play.
Hey, bring it. Love it. Hey, you get 6 years to play at this. So if you've only used up four, you got 2 years left.
Perfect. I'm going to need the warm-up.
Love it.
So, Jeremiah, the eligibility is 6 years in college. So as soon as you start college, your clock starts ticking for that club championship?
Yeah, that's correct. So you can play four at college, and then I've had girls come in. I had a girl play Washington State for four and then came and played for me in grad school for two when she came to Baylor.
Well, that's a great option for kids looking to continue playing and while getting their graduate degree. I didn't really know that opportunity even existed.
Yeah. No, grad students are completely eligible to play.
Excellent. Well, Jeremiah, thanks for calling in. We really appreciate the information and the support. We'll look forward to it. Make sure you let us know where the next event's going to be.
Absolutely will do. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
All right. All right, Jeremiah Tiffin.
I like him.
I like
a great name.
Well, he can be a great correspondent for us. Jeremiah, you call in anytime and talk about.
You know, Kevin and Matt, this is the amazing thing is it's really a part of the volleyball world that I don't know much about, and I know Barney, you don't either. I mean, it's a very cool part of volleyball. I think the culture and the lifestyle, and you know, you talked about, you know, they pay their way to get there. I mean, these are people that really love playing the game, and what an atmosphere that must be. It's kind of untapped for those of us in the volleyball world that haven't been a part of it.
I think you hit it on the head when you talked about what it would really do if the NCAA lifted the scholarship restriction and teams could start to be supported in a greater manner throughout the nation, how quickly men's volleyball would take off. And one of the interesting things is that Wisconsin and Illinois have some of the strongest programs. I mean, this was where I grew up, and you pretty much, when you started volleyball, it was kickoffs from the basketball program where kids in the off season from basketball would go and play volleyball. So there's a tremendous amount of really good athletes getting involved with the sport. And I continue to believe that if you would put scholarship money out there, the men's side of the game would grow to be exactly the same size as the women's side of the game. And really, it would benefit the women's side, because then you'd have that comparable sport. You would have men's and women's and the participation numbers that you could really start to set some policy and make some waves with the NCAA. And I think you lack that right now. I've talked several times recently about the women's sport and how they don't have the amount of clout that they really ought to, given the participation numbers. And I think that the men's programs coming up would definitely help that. And you could rival basketball maybe in a long-term situation. Maybe not for TV coverage, but certainly with participation numbers in the universities.
Yeah, you know, one thing I talked about this weekend, we were talking to a couple people about when we started playing, and I was the same way as you, Barney, basketball player that kind of picked up volleyball when more of the Valley schools started to get it in the late 80s. We just did it for a few months to do because basketball was over, and we wanted to stay in shape. But the one thing I always found about volleyball is when you start playing it, you get so much better quickly. You see growth in your game, and you really get hooked on the sport. And I think fans across the country that play beach volleyball and always come to our events, they play it, and they love it. And they're hooked on it, you know. And I think that's why golf got so popular. Tiger broke on the scene, and everyone started playing. And you watch the Masters, and you're like, how do they make that shot? You know, because you can't. You know, so people that don't play volleyball don't really know the love of it or the joy in it. So that's what I love about this. The club division. These guys all play. These women play, and they love it. And they're the ones that really support this game.
Definitely, definitely. The game is healthy outside of just the upper levels. Hey, we're going to take a short break. I'm here. Geeter's here calling in. Matt Boyce subbing in. DJ Roche sent us along a little bit of music. We're going to throw that up. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. We're going to have Rick Dunitz, from Dig Pink from the Side Out Foundation right here on the Net Live. Right back. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back into the Net Live here on the Volleyball Network. Glad you're here. Kevin Barnett sitting in the studio, Chris Geeter-McGee, and Matt Boyce on the line, co-hosting remotely. Geeter,
you got
some good work going today, Geeter. You're out paying the bills this week, aren't you?
Yeah, I got to work a lot this week, Barney. Got the Dodger game tonight. I'm off tomorrow, which is great, so I can get some family time. Wednesday, got game two for the Lakers because the first round is on FS West, so I will be working games two and five for the Lakers. Of course, they're down 0-1, so that's kind of tragic. And then I work Dodgers Thursday, Friday. So a lot of work this week, Barney. But that's a good thing because you're not making any money when you're staying at home, right, kid?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm sitting here not making any money. That's all right. Having a good time doing this show. I'm pleased to bring in our next guest, our first guest for today. He's the executive director of the Side Out Foundation and also the founder. He created the Side Out Foundation in honor of his mother, Gloria, who lived with breast cancer for over 6 years. They've raised nearly $250,000 for cancer research. Their goal is $2.5 million. Welcome to the Net Live, Rick Dunitz. Rick, welcome in.
Thanks a lot for getting my name right. Ricky Donuts is what I was called when I was in elementary school.
That's not too bad. I'm all called in elementary school, donuts isn't too bad.
I guess not. Donuts are good things in elementary school for sure. Yeah, actually, let me correct you on one thing there. We actually, in the 7 years of our existence, we've actually raised $3.5 million. And this past year, our teams were able to raise $1.5 million. So this year's goal is a little bit higher. We're shooting for the $3 million mark.
I see. Okay, because I was looking at the front of your page, and it said fundraising efforts, goal $2.5 million, team donations $232, or total donations. Is this not
right?
Your...
Well, that's for this year.
Okay.
But yeah. Wow. But we set the goals kind of like our we have a little fundraising system that puts that stuff up on the website for us. But behind the scenes, I'm giving you the facts behind the scenes here. That's really what we're shooting for is $3 million if we can.
Well, I've been surfing around your site and there's just a massive amount of information about cancer and how to get involved in events. Tell us a little bit about the founding of this organization, how you started.
Well, back in 2004, my mother had contracted breast cancer for the second time, and without going into the heavy details of the story, basically what happened is my team kind of rallied around this cause that season and sort of overachieved, and that overachievement and kind of looking at my mother's situation kind of motivated the team to play harder, and they worked hard, and my mother got to watch some of those matches, and that kind of motivated her to fight the disease for the second time. Usually when you get that second diagnosis, you're going, this isn't looking too good for me. And she was very depressed, but this team really lifted her up and motivated her, and it was really kind of this neat thing of the team kind of supporting my mother and I and my mother's condition and situation kind of motivating my team to do better. In fact, kind of interesting part about that is I didn't know a thing about volleyball back in those days. Didn't know what an overlap was, couldn't teach a kid how to pass. I was an assistant. I didn't know what was going on. But I guess one of the things you learn as a coach is it's not what you know. It's about what that team needs to succeed. And that year the team needed just a positive thing to kind of get them motivated. It worked out really great. So after that, we decided to start the foundation, and we started off doing grass doubles tournaments out here on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And we did that for about 4 or 5 years. And we got to a point where we said, there's just a cap to how much funds we can actually raise and how much of a difference we can make nationally. So we were looking around the Internet, and we noticed that there was something out there called Dig for the Cure. And it was run by a lady by the name of Lisa Marston, who was at UNC Charlotte at the time. And
okay.
She was dealing with much the same situation. And what she was doing was she was hosting like these events at her college. And she was bringing people out, and they were raising a tremendous amount of funds. And then she went out and went to all the college coaches and got them kind of behind her thing, and she was raising like tremendous amount of funds. So I looked at that. I said, wow, I think we could do that. I think, we're pretty good with technology. Perhaps we can figure out a way to get on board with that. And so we extrapolated a list of 25,000 volleyball coaches at the high school, middle school, and college level. And I'm not one to plan very well. I'm just the kind of guy to say, let's email people and see what happens. And so we sent an email out without even having a game plan, and before we knew it, we had thousands of coaches contacting us for information. So that year, in the first year, it was my father and I running the whole thing, and we were able to raise $500,000 in the first year of us doing it. And right after that, I called Lisa up, and I said, Lisa, you're doing great stuff, no doubt. Why don't you come on our board of directors, and maybe we can help you manage this whole thing. And so now Lisa is on the board of directors of the SideOut Foundation, and all the Dig for the Cure teams are working with SideOut now. So that's where we are right now. A guy you guys know, St. John Smith's also on our board of directors, very active participant.
Yep.
And the rest is history.
So you started with grass tournaments. Where are you now as far as events go? I see Dig Pink in a lot of different places. And what kind of events are you behind, and who are the real power players involved with you?
Well, here's the key thing is that, you know, we were on a board call just the other day, and we were talking about, do you want to expand to other sports and other things like that? And I remember some board of directors folks were saying, hey, you know, we should be doing other sports now. And then I got an email from Sinjin, and Sinjin was like, you know what, we got a lot to do with volleyball. There's a lot to do right here. We need to focus. We need to focus on our constituents. And that's kind of what's unique about us is that we've made a pretty dedicated effort to concentrate on the sport of volleyball. So what does that mean? It means we can do anything in the sport of volleyball throughout the year. So the Dig Pink Rally is our October initiative. That's the high school, college, university initiative that we do. It's our catalyst event. It's our largest event, and it raises the most funds. But we also are attempting to expand doing more, you know, outdoor events with the resurgence, or not the resurgence, but the powerful, you know, energy coming out of outdoor volleyball right now. We really want to get into beach and grass tournaments as well so that we can do something during the summer months. And then for the six-month club season, right now we're doing a thing called the Dig Pink Tour, and we're going all over the country, going to national qualifiers and large tournament events, and we're making the second day of these events the Dig Pink Day. The kids come out, they wear their pink jerseys, pink T-shirts. We try to have a little bit of a pink out, and we show our support.
Interesting. That's great stuff. Do you guys cooperate at all with other organizations? I know I've seen the Susan G. Komen Foundation in a lot of different places doing similar things with large sporting events.
Yeah, I mean, here's the complex part of this, you know, and I encourage people to do their due diligence, and when they're researching, when they want to do these events, you know, we don't expect we would like to unify the sport as much as humanly possible, but we understand that people have different motives and different missions and different priorities. In the case of Susan G. Komen, they're sort of the 500-pound gorilla. They're the big, giant charity that's raising funds at a monumental rate, and they're doing tremendous things in the areas of prevention and early detection. And it's great to be connected with them. The difference between them and us is we're a little bit more of a proactive organization, meaning When we raise the dollars, we are acting as an advocate on behalf of our constituents, meaning we're saying, hey, we want to go out there and find the best way to utilize these funds in a way that's going to have significant and identifiable impact on the disease. So we went a different route, and we decided we were going to invest in what they call translational research. It's kind of a technical term. I won't get too much into it, but it's basically about getting revolutionary research to the bedside, so that's helping people. And so in the first year that we were able to raise funds, we started to work on a game plan to not just fund a clinical trial, but to own a clinical trial. So the SideOut Foundation and the sport of volleyball have created and are running an actual clinical trial that is going to change the way that breast cancer is treated internationally. And it was really great. I mean, the beautiful thing about it is it's something that everybody can grab onto, and they can see it, and they can feel it. Sometimes when you donate to larger charities, you might not feel like you're feeling the impact of the dollars that you raised. But with us, we can tell you very specifically how those funds are being utilized. And in this case, the kids for the past 3 years are funding a revolutionary clinical trial that is called the side-out protocol that is being spoken about at breast cancer conventions all over the country.
Hey, Rick, it's Peter. I think, you know, everyone you know has been affected by cancer in some form or another, and whether it's a family member or a friend. People are going to hear this and want to know, how do we get involved? How can we donate time, money? Can you take us through that process?
Sure. Very simply, you can go to one of two websites. You can go to www.side-out.org and click around just like you guys did. Or if you want to go directly to get some information, you can go to www.digpink.org. And we have a request information form. And once we get the information from you, we submit it to a regional representative who will physically pick up the phone and call you or email you and give you instructions on how you can get started. That's something that we do that we pride ourselves in doing is supporting the teams that are hosting initiatives. And so we have a representative. You can pick up the phone. You can talk to them. They'll tell you not only how to do the fundraising. If you don't want to do fundraising, that's kind of a unique thing about us. If you just want to do an awareness event, we'll help you get materials and information to do an awareness event. We can tell you where to purchase T-shirts if you want to do a T-shirt design for your event, or you know, jersey or volleyball or equipment. We have vendors that we work with. It's kind of a nice thing if you're, you know, volleyball coaches. You know, they're volleyball coaches. We don't expect them to actually manage this process. In fact, we tell the coaches, like, find an administrator or a parent to kind of manage this for you so that you can do the one thing that you're hired to do, and that's coach volleyball. But once you get the process rolling with us, we will walk you through the entire thing and handhold you right through it. And if you're really engaged and inspired, you can go out and do your own thing, and if you need help, we'll be here for you.
Rick, I know one thing a lot of people are concerned about when they're donating their money to organizations for various causes. They want to know what the pass-through rate is and how effective their money is really being in the area that they're donating to or the cause that they're supporting. Talk a little bit about, you know, and you're actually funding trials, you actually have a protocol, but talk a little bit about the pass-through rate of your organization.
Well, you know, we talk about the key word is operational costs. And the operational cost industry kind of average across nonprofits is around 25%. Now, we attempt to stick to that protocol, around 25%. Sometimes, you know, last year was a bad year, and actually was a bad year for all charities. All charities suffered last year. It was a recession year, and a lot of charities were hit in the fundraising pretty hard. We were able to maintain very well. And our operational cost on a three-year average of doing these large events is about 22%. Which is a little bit below the industry standard. Our goal would be to get it down to 10. But, you know, the way charities work are, you know, you have to raise a certain amount of funding to be able to, you know, and the larger you grow, you have to hire staff. It's a very complex thing. But our vision is to reduce that operational cost and raise the amount of funds that we can do tremendous things with the cause and not have too much of an issue there. Now, as far as one other thing that we do that I didn't speak about is that we will, for a school that is interested, donate a percentage back to a local community compassionate support organization. And we believe that compassionate support organizations, which are like organizations that support free mammograms or they help you navigate the process of I have breast cancer, what do I do next? Those types of things, or maybe they have holistic programs. Those types of organizations we will give back to in the local community. If you tell us who they are, we will make sure that a percentage of your funds go to that organization so that you could feel some impact locally as well.
Very nice, very nice. And obviously the more money that you raise, the lower the operating costs get as you are able to bring in more donations.
Exactly. And, you know, I encourage people to kind of look at things a little bit differently. We get caught up in operational costs. The reality is that we should be focusing on impact. How much impact can we have on the disease? If anybody wants to pick up the phone and call me and want to talk about my story, I think that they would feel engaged to know that we are passionate about this, so passionate that we would never invest any funding into something frivolous. We wanted impact. We want to make sure that's having a tremendous impact on the disease. So we can look at operational costs, but I think that when you're looking for a charity, I think impact is kind of the key word. See what they're doing. See if it matches your vision. and hopefully, you know, you'll feel really good about it. Now, one thing I did want to throw at you guys, you know, there's a sort of a strange connection with Reed here. I don't know if you got if our representatives told you, but Reed actually played high school at one of the schools that has the largest Dig Pink initiative in the country, Mountain Point High School.
Awesome.
Okay? Mountain Point, yeah. And so the really cool thing, it's called Dig Pink in Ahwatukee, Arizona. These two teams, arch rivals, great match, phenomenal match. They raise between $20,000 and $30,000 a year for the Side Eye Foundation. It is an insane event. It is a rocking event. You guys should come to this year's Dig Pink and Tukey and broadcast from Mountain Point High School.
Great.
If possible.
Done deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And maybe we get Reed wearing a pink shirt, you know?
Yeah, well, that's hard. He does that on a daily basis, so that's not a problem.
We're talking knee-high pink socks. I mean, we need them in the traditional super high women's club socks. That's what we need.
Well, actually, let me take it to the next level. You know, our whole kind of mantra as an organization is we kind of have this whole retro theme. Everything's retro. So Dig Pink is like it's this whole 70s deal. Now, I got more than one pair of 3-inch platform shoes and a couple polyester suits. Maybe we get Reed wearing one of those. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And just get boys a boys medium. It's going to be perfect.
Yeah,
sure.
I can definitely bring some awareness for you. I look like a Pepto-Bismol bottle.
Well, you know what's funny is the boys teams come to these events, man, and they just go nuts. I mean, those guys are wearing pink leotards. They're wearing all kinds of crazy stuff, tutus. It's just great, man. The environment out there is great. Those schools are doing a phenomenal job, and it would be awesome to have you guys out there. So maybe we can touch base and work out the dates, and maybe you guys can come out and broadcast from there.
That sounds great. Rick, give out your contact information one more time. If they want to give you guys a call, contact the organization, websites, email, and so on.
Cool. You can reach us. Go to the website at www.side-out.org. Or you can give us a call at 877-DIG-PINK.
All right, 877-DIG-PINK. Rick Dunitz is the executive director and founder of the Side Out Foundation and their initiative, Dig Pink. Get out there and get involved. Rick, thanks for spending time with us today.
All right, thanks, fellas.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Keeter?
So, Barney.
Yeah?
Barney, far we're going to go to the Dig Pink event. We're going to the club championships. We're going to Louisville. We're going to Texas. We got a lot of people that are going to get us out there, apparently. I mean, hopefully someone's going to deliver. What do you think, bud?
Yeah, we got to get out on one of these trips here. Definitely. Everyone, I think we're really touching the community in a way that we had hoped when we first started this. So hopefully that continues. Hey,
hopefully,
we're
going to
take a short break here. We'll be right back here on the Net Live. I kind of miss DJR. He's not here.
How funny was the Pepto-Bismol bottle line by Matt? I mean, I can't get over that one.
That's why he's here. I don't care if he says anything else the rest of the show. He's already delivered. Matt Boyce, keep it up. The Net Live. Be right back. Yeah. Welcome back to the Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. That's Say Aha by Santa Gold. Wow, I'm learning more about music from DJR than I ever thought possible.
Hey, Kevin. Hey.
Yes, sir.
It's Matt Boyce. And I wanted to just tell you, we think you're doing a really good job. Nobody ever stops for making good comments ever towards you. It's usually criticism from Chris. And I just wanted to say you're doing a really good job. Thank you.
Thanks, Boyce. I appreciate that. You can come back anytime. Anytime.
Oh, the croc.
Hey, the new Volleyball Magazine is out, and we're excited to sign a deal with Volleyball Magazine recently. They've been involved with the volleyball community for more than 20 years, and they provide the latest in volleyball news, information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you inside with access to the sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, VB Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit them today at volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and you can get a free stainless steel water bottle, $50 value from the NEW Water Bottle Company, the industry's number one volleyball magazine of volleyball. Check it out. The new mag just arrived in my mailbox. I did not have time to review it yet, but on the cover this month is Bill Ferguson.
Getting
really,
serious.
They have done something with the airbrushing because he looks like something between an oil painting or a picture of a wax Bill Ferguson, a Madame Tussauds wax museum version of him. It's not real.
Speaking for somebody that's in the magazine business, I can tell you that they use the Majestic feature on Photoshop in that particular cover. So just that's just a professional term.
Majestic. One click?
Yeah, one click.
Wow. I think there should be a person in a scepter in here with him or something, some sort of royal backdrop. Yes, Keeter.
We were on the plane headed to Reno, and Cam Green, who is the assistant coach, one of the assistant coaches at USC, pulled it up on his iPad. And I got to tell you, we all got a big kick out of it. The smirk that he has and the getting serious comments. And so we decided to text Bill, and he said out of the 347 photos, that was the one they picked.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's got a glimmer in his eye. He's just but it's his chin and the light on his chin that just looks like a fresco painting from the Italian Renaissance or something. I don't know. It's very odd.
Yeah, Billy, call in. Let us know about the model shoot that you just went through with Jason Olive, and just what a fantastic time that must have been. Because Billy really, really doing a lot of modeling in his younger days. So.
Oh, and you sure know the request was like, I want green M&Ms. I don't care if you get the mixed bag. Pick them all out.
He's going on Jennifer Lopez on him. So, new issues out. It's a summer preview. They have swimsuits, trunks, a lot of gear. New information, they have a volleyball lab thing where they're testing top gear now, and good feature on the men with top opposites. Some good information in here. We're going to be digging further and further into Volleyball Magazine as we get along on this relationship with them. Exciting
stuff.
Is
your picture in there?
Our picture should be in here. The Net Live has a full-page ad that you can check out, and Geeter's still in the middle. I need to have him Photoshop that. We need to move you off to the side.
The least you can do since I'm not in the intro of the show.
That's right. That's right. We have to figure out some way to stroke your ego and keep you here. Well, hey, we have one of the original callers to this program. He hasn't called in a while, but he's got kind of a unique challenge that he's going to be doing the next time he's out here in town, I think in about 2 weeks. Brandon Rosenthal, friend of the show, welcome back in and tell us about the challenge that you have laid down with me.
Well, I mean, bottom line, Barnett's seen me eat before, and we were in casual conversation about in and out. He said something to the extent that I couldn't put away X amount of in and out burgers, double-double, animal style, and I told him, no way, I'm on it. And so next week, I'm flying out just for the challenge, literally flying out and flying back to Nash, Vegas, because I want to make Barnett eat his words. No pun intended.
I don't think I'm going to. Explain the challenge. How many In-N-Out double-doubles animal style do you have to put away in one sitting? This is a one-hour time frame, too. We're not talking about spending all afternoon sitting there.
No, I mean, I told you, 20 minutes, 4 double-doubles.
Oh.
No problem.
Four. 20 minutes?
Dieter, you almost choked.
20 minutes.
I just threw up in my mouth.
Which in and out are you going to go to, and is there security in case Kobayashi shows up?
What about Joey Chestnut? Joey Chestnut, I mean, is really, I mean, we forget about Joey Chestnut. Poor guy.
So you're planning on joining the Competitive Eaters Association, becoming one of those athletes?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great if I was sponsored by the Net Live and I had, you know, I wore my Net Live T-shirt and, you know, represented you guys?
It's definitely something we have to videotape. Gentlemen, over under on how far he gets.
Overachieves.
Five?
Four and a half.
Just to wash down. Geeter?
I'd say he's going to get to three.
Geeter, I mean, take into the fact that all of this is so that Barnett actually has to pay for the meal. So we all know how tight Barnett is sometimes with actually opening his wallet and paying for meals and things like that. So, I mean, this is really for all of us.
You know what? I'm definitely going to support you. I just don't know if I want more than six patties going down your gullet.
I'm telling you, no problem. Four, no problem.
See, I'm thinking he gets three down, and then he takes a breather. He just takes two breaths and goes, I can't do it. I can't
and
do it.
And by the way, and you need to have a strawberry shake as well, just to wash her down.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, as I'm being rolled out the door, I'm going to get Barnett, kind of like in the Great Outdoors with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, if we get a shake, Danny, can you throw some hats in for the kids?
Absolutely. So next week, boys,
as long as there's not
it's going to be done.
When we get back here, I'm okay with it.
Perfect.
My goodness. All right, so that's the challenge. It's the Net Live Man versus Food episode that's going to happen April 26th here in Redondo Beach, California. Brandon, thanks for calling in, and you better stop eating now, either that or start training.
No worries, boys. Keep up the great work.
All right. Go Chivo Man versus Food. Do something to get yourself ready. I'm paging through Volleyball Magazine here, just checking it out. And our old friend Austin Rester is in here. Dan Madden would be very disgruntled to see Austin Rester gracing the inside of a Volleyball Magazine. He's got some sort of vendetta against him.
Danny Madden doesn't like Austin Rester, huh?
No. He's complained several times about him, that he's just not a very good volleyball player. And I have to disagree. Seems like he's a pretty decent volleyball player, given that he's still on the beach circuit here. But men and women in swimsuits, all kinds of people through this magazine. It's going to be a good one. I'm going to give this a read tonight.
I think his best finish is a fifth. He's gotten some sevenths and ninths. He's a phenomenal athlete. Definitely started the game late, but has gotten a lot better. I wouldn't call him a bad volleyball player, Dan.
He's a good bouncer. He's a good bouncer because about a month ago he wouldn't even let me into 12th and Highland.
Austin Rester wouldn't let you into 12th and Highland?
No, not unless I gave him $20. He said he'd get fired. I looked at him and I gave him my best Donald Trump. No, you're fired.
I got to tell you, I've changed everything. What a hack.
That's it right there. Flipped
what a
around.
Complete goof. I'm going to let him know too when I see him.
What else is happening in the volleyball world, Geeter? What else you got for us? What are you in touch with the juniors team?
Brooke Hansen and Lauren Fendrick actually won the country quota yesterday over Brittany Hochaver and Jennifer Fatma. So they are now in the qualifier. They won their first round. They're playing Brazil to get into the main draw. So that's going on. The men's country quota is happening today, and the men's qualifier will be tomorrow. So first FIVB weekend in Brasilia. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that on the FIVB website.
I thought he said juniors.
Can you explain that country quota for people who don't know?
So you're only allowed a certain amount of teams in the main draw. So the FIVB started this basically to kind of, it was basically started for Brazil and USA. So you have to play, you know, your three teams are allowed in the main draw. Three best points. So you have Dahlhauser, Rogers, Furbringer, Lucena, and you have Gibbon, Rosenthal. Now, Wong and Casey are that fourth team. They're just barely behind those guys in points. They got a wild card draw, so they are into the main draw. But usually they would be in the country quota playing whomever, comes to that tournament. So Patterson and Keenan, they have to play them. Say Ty Trambley and somebody came, they'd have to play them. You play that game or those matches, depending on how many teams are in your country quota, the winner of the country quota goes into the regular qualifier the next day, and you have to win a couple more matches before you get into the main draw. So it's very difficult. It's a lot of volleyball. So sometimes, you know, guys in the old day, you know, last year, the year before, you'd have guys flying over all the way to Prague, and, you know, you'd be playing against each other on a Tuesday. You lose, you're done. You know, you lose 17-15 in the third, and you're going home. You don't even
there's
get into
the qualifier. There's your juniors update.
Yeah, so there's your juniors update on the FIVB side.
Man, that's a tough system. That's a lot of volleyball. You better have some fresh legs if you're going to be going through that on a weekly basis.
Yeah. So I think that's what's going on in the world of volleyball right now. Beach is starting. That's exciting for a lot of us.
Yeah, that is good. That is good. I'm glad that there's plenty of action out there. We know that we've talked about all the confusion here in the States, but certainly the FIVB has had its schedule set and ready to roll for this season. Let's talk a little juniors. Since we have two juniors guys here on the line, give us the lowdown. Besides Geeter's massive success, which I'm sure he'll mention at least one or two more times, what else is happening?
Well, I think who I want to have on is Z from Team Z.
Yeah.
Great coach, great program. Former president of the JVA. Has qualified for Junior Olympics. I'm not sure if they're going to go to Junior Olympics. I haven't talked to them myself, but it's definitely been talked about on prepvolleyball.com and Volley Talk. It's a lot of people are curious as to what's going on. Our team's breaking off the JVA that was started a few years ago. And so there's definitely some controversy maybe going on in the juniors world these days, but right now you're just really in the heat of all the qualifiers. You got the final week coming up next week, and after that, JOs is basically set. You're going to know your teams in every division that have qualified, and you start really getting after it. You go through your regionals in May, and then you have about a 6-week period to get ready and prepare for Junior Olympics, which is the ultimate prize.
It had taken me 7 years to not be in the know. And only in the last 6 months have I gotten back into it. And so I had a nice break. I have nothing to contribute to this segment at all.
You sound like Barnett.
That's great, man. Yeah. Two Barnetts on the show not caring about juniors. Matt, the question I was going to ask you is, how much do you ever hear about from your wife and from your mother about blowback as it relates to costs, not only for regular club events, but also for perhaps an impromptu trip to try and qualify for JOs or the effort to go to JOs? And how many teams, the second question is kind of for both of you, how many teams do you see that qualify for JOs, have a great season, but choose not to go because of the cost?
Okay.
Matt,
you have to quantify that first in the regard that for kids that are really, I mean, this is like their primary sport and they're very aware of the competitive landscape, and most of the top clubs pretty much have the same fees, so to speak, built in. You don't really hear from them. And then you get parents that they just complain when Starbucks raises the cup of coffee. So you got to kind of quantify it. There's some that are just and some that aren't. But I think what you'll start seeing down the road are a lot more kind of tiered programs where, let's say you got a 10-year-old, you know, you're not going to have that team going to a bunch of tournaments and all the costs associated with that. Maybe they're just like my wife has a program she calls the Diggers program. So because there's not as much travel involved, it's a great way for kids that are just getting into the sport to come in and the parents not to have to, you know, go whole paycheck to play volleyball.
Yeah, you know, there's different levels too, Barney. I mean, just like any business, there's some clubs that are expensive and some that aren't. So there's, you know, different price ranges that parents can look into. I mean, you definitely hear that complaint that club is expensive. But like Matt said, when you get to a certain level, a lot of the people are willing to pay it and expect to pay it. I think the biggest complaints I get from parents, and I think parents have become a major player in the club world in terms of complaining and in-house fighting. And it's all about usually playing time. It's playing time, and then it's your team isn't successful. In their eyes, success means Are you in Division One? Are you qualifying for JOs? I think, you know, parents get so upset when their kids aren't stars, because when they play in high school or they play on these other teams, they play all the time. They come from programs where they're the best players. But when you go to a club team where you have the best of the best, not everyone plays. And teaching them the team process and the journey is tough when they're paying a lot of money. They don't care about that. They want to see success on the court from their kid because they're hoping their kid can get into college. So that's the major, major issue that we face, at least in club.
I do think that there is an opportunity for the kind of the AYSO model, you know, in parity with the one that Chris and I and all of us are more familiar with, where, you know, you're competing and you go in understanding that this is the way that it works. But I definitely think there's a group of people out there that would be willing to still pay if they knew that it was one of those everybody gets playing time thing. I absolutely hate what I just said myself, because I can't stand that. But, you know, you've got to cater to people.
Well, I think you're saying there is a market out there for that. And even though that may not be your focus or the focus of a lot of folks, but that there is definitely a marketplace for participation rather than achievement necessarily.
Absolutely.
See, boys,
yeah, and you know, sorry, go on.
I just said Boyce did have something to contribute.
Yeah, he did. He actually had a lot. It's inside of him, and he knows it. It's like, you know, he's also a dancer inside when he really puts his mind into it.
Is this the part where I play Working for the Weekend? We can have a dance off.
Chippendales.
You know, Barney, I'm sure you know this, as do probably many of our listeners who know Matt personally. You know, his go-to is Sweet Caroline. I don't know if he's going to sing it on this show. Maybe wait for Jay Roche to come back to play the instrumental. But you know, that is Matt's go-to. He has done it at weddings. He did it at his own wedding. He does it at bars. He does
J-O's.
It at dueling piano bars. He does it at Junior Olympics. He did it in Vegas on a nightly basis. It's very popular, and maybe one day we'll get it on this show.
Can I just say one of the heights of all the times I've done it was Austin, Texas, Boys JOs last year, Pete's Dueling Piano Bar. Now, you have to pay to sing at a piano bar. I did four nights in a row, and by the third night, I had parents from Balboa Bay paying for me to go up a second time in the same evening. It was unbelievable.
Well, we don't want to compromise the audio quality of this high-level performance, so we'll have to have you in studio to belt this one out. We'll have Jeremy on hand to make sure he mixes the music. Will we need auto-tune, or you got it right on?
No, I think it's a conversation. We'll talk later about it.
And you know, Kevin, at my wedding, we requested him to do it back in 2005, and he got up there and did a whole Neil Diamond routine with a napkin over his arm. Gave a whole intro, just dialogue. He sounds better than Neil Diamond. It was really funny. A highlight, definitely, of my wedding.
I performed the hell out of that song at your wedding, Chris.
Yes, you did.
Rebecca Black really has nothing on you. And if we could get you on YouTube, get some high production value, we could get you 17 million hits or a billion views or whatever she has on there.
Viral. That's going to go
viral. Hate to interrupt, Hanson Fendrick, just seeing on the chat room here, win over Brazil 21-14, 21-19. So they're in the they're in the main draw, and happy for them. Brooke Hanson, who, you know, played the tournament with Carrie last year, and then she was all set to play with Angie Akers. And then once Carrie and Misty got back together, Nicole Brana picked up Angie, so she went back to Lauren Fendrick. So for her, it's been kind of a whirlwind offseason, so I'm happy for them that they are in the main draw.
That's been a team that's done very well. They did well in the Norseca events leading up to this, and had a good end of the year last year. Seems like they're one of the teams on the rise.
Yeah, no doubt. Not too many people that work harder than Brooke Hanson.
Well, good news. More Americans participating in the main draw. That's good stuff. Hey, we want to transition to a fun topic that Boyce put out here, and I think we haven't ever talked about it. I mentioned it with Brooke Delano at the AVCA convention this past year when I asked her to explain what a runza was, which is a meat and cabbage concoction they serve only in Nebraska at Runza restaurants. And I asked her if that was a good pregame or postgame meal. She went postgame for the meat and cabbage combination. But Boyce wanted to know, which college has your favorite pregame meal, and what restaurant is it?
Ooh, that's good. We got to get people calling in on the chat room with that. That's a good
calling in. Chat room's blowing up right now. I think it might crash.
347-677-1525. If you want to call in and tell us the best place to eat at a college pregame, doesn't matter what level, doesn't matter men's, women's, anywhere you go and eat religiously before you play at a match, give us a call, 347-677-1525, or throw it up on the chat board. We're watching there. Geeter, you have any favorites?
Well, back at the Ridge, we would get $10. We'd hop off the Matabus, and we went to every Sizzler probably in the country for the salad bar. Coley would put his $10 in his pocket and sit down and wait for me to bring out the salad bar plate, and then he would just eat off my plate so he could keep the $10. That's how poor
we
were.
Oh, my goodness. Criminal.
Back in the day. We didn't get to go to many other places. I think Matt has the same boat. The one place we got to branch out was at UCSB, and everyone loved that. We'd go to Freebirds without a question. I think in the men's game, that will always be number one. In the women's game, probably, I think you'll hear a lot of people say they like to go to Cal Berkeley. There's a lot of great places there, a lot of legendary places at Berkeley. But UCSB, Freebirds for me.
Ditto. I now would have to have the low-carb bowl with no tortilla, but when I was playing and coaching, if there was a ring of fire around Isla Vista, I would get the Freebirds. And now there's one at SC, so it's not quite as much of a hidden gem as it used to be, but there's one right by USC I just noticed on Saturday night.
Freebirds is a burrito joint that for years and years was only located right there in Isla Vista outside of UC Santa Barbara. Isla Vista, which is, God, it's sort of like it's sort of like the Running Man, Schwarzenegger, where he gets put into the game. Like, if you got put into a game, you'd get stuck in Isla Vista and have to try and get out alive, or at least sober. It's a crazy, crazy place outside of UC Santa Barbara, but Freebirds was the place we always, always went.
Nick, Kevin,
yes.
do you know what Peter Kadashi, his no. favorite pregame meal was?
Yeah, it was an extra-large pizza, all of it.
It was the nearest Jack in the Box, fries, no burger, just like four orders of fries, and 52 packets of mayonnaise. And Mark Prescio, his senior year, was assigned to make sure that he never found a Jack in the Box on the road.
Peter Kodachi was a Hungarian player who came over and played 1 year of club volleyball here in the United States, and then got a scholarship to Pepperdine University, played with me for 2 years. And this gentleman, he was about 6'5", 6'6", maybe a little taller, but he weighed 280 pounds. And I think by the end of the season, he was close to 300 pounds. But he was just a monster individual. And Peter was really, really good for about a game and a half. And then the fries kicked in, and the mayo started coursing through his veins, and he kind of faded out towards the end of matches. And you'd think that at 280, he couldn't get up, but I think he touched like 11.9.
No, it's really weird. Long arms, and his thighs were like the size of George Romaine's head. They were huge, and it looked like clockwork. Game and a half in, the wheels would just fall off. His
yeah.
knee pads were screaming like, "Let me off of here."
Did any of you guys ever get the tip when you were at Northridge to go to My Hero Sub Shop on
no.
Plumber?
No.
That was, for us at Northridge, that was our pregame meal all the time when we had home games, but I was talking about on the road. But we had a great sub shop. A guy named Howie ran it for years and years, and he was a huge Northridge supporter. I don't know how legal it was because I got a free sub every single day, and so did my roommates. I think he thought every guy played volleyball that went to that school, but it just had the greatest subs, and they had this tomato salad that he made, and no one ever knew the recipe, and he put that on the turkey sandwich, and it was just phenomenal. So My Hero at Northridge was pretty legendary, if you guys ever get a chance to go out there.
Man, I lived on Plumber. I never even knew about that place. We used to go for Pierce at home games. We used to wander up to the Ralphs. You know, you talk about being on a budget. We're in junior college. That's even below the Ridge as far as budgetary concerns go, and you'd lay down your $8 for a deli sandwich made at the Ralphs up there on Victory. So.
Yeah, wow, that's really reaching.
Yeah, it's a struggle in junior college. It's a struggle. Hey, we've got a caller on the line, 814. Hope you're calling about the best places to eat.
It is me, Barney. It's Jay.
Oh, you see, Jay, you throw a different number at us, and we just don't know what to do. You get in on this discussion before we go to College Volleyball Weekly here in just a second.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What's the best place to eat at Penn State? If I'm coming to play against you guys and I'm looking for a good pregame meal, where am I getting directed there in Happy Valley?
Ooh, you know, Pita Pocket's a pretty good joint that everybody likes. It's kind of one of those Subway-type deals, but it's with pitas. It's a pretty good joint. We have a Fraser Street Deli that does a little thing for our guys, kind of a training table situation. So, you know, there's a lot of good places out here, but let me give a plug for Santa Cruz for all you guys that get a chance to go up there. Planet Fresh Taqueria. Unbelievable how good that joint is up there.
Planet Fresh Taqueria. That sounds
Planet
like
Fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Jay, I'd love to hear some of the people in the women's game because they get to travel so much more than the men's game. You know, I'd love to hear some of the places. I know when I went to LSU, Fran Flory, the coach, sent me over to this place. It was awesome, just his Cajun style. And so, you know, I first thing I always do when I go to these women's matches, I always talk to the coaches about where to eat.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, that kind of makes the trip special when there's a good place to go.
Yeah, hey, absolutely.
Let's not keep this discussion to just players because, honestly, as a performer, as talent on air, I need a pregame meal. And when I've been to Chicago several years with the World League, going to go again this year. And 3 years ago, I'd heard about Rick Bayless, very famous chef, and the Frontera Grill, or Tompolo Bompo, which is their evening thing. It's a Mexican place, like a gourmet Mexican place, one of the very first in the United States. And just an epic review of that place. So I tried to go 2 years ago. I arrive on a beautiful, sunny, 70-degree June day, unheard of in Chicago. No humidity. Cardinals, Cubs going to be playing later that afternoon. Downtown is packed with jerseys from the different sides. And I roll up to this place, ask her, say, how about a table for four? I'm with a couple of folks from the production. How about a table for four? She says, okay, that'll be 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours? Are you kidding me?
And you waited.
No, I couldn't do it. I had to get back for the match. So I went across the street, had a deli sandwich, wasn't happy about it.
What a downgrade right there.
The next year, this is last summer, I made my reservations in March for my July date in Chicago. And I went to Frontera Grill in Chicago. It is an unbelievable restaurant. If you ever get a chance to go, you have to go to Frontera Grill in Chicago, downtown by Rick Bayless. Look it up on the internet. It was by far the best food I've ever had in a Mexican restaurant and possibly any restaurant. Brandon Rosenthal just called the program. He met us there. He flew up that morning, met us there. We were getting in at 11 o'clock. Place opens at 10:30. He arrived at 10:30. He said when he showed up, it wasn't open yet. There was a line around the block to get into the place. He had no idea what this place was all about. So I made my reservations about a month and a half ago for this year. So going to be eating there again on Saturday afternoon.
Every summer, Barney, when we go to Chicago, it's Giordano's without a doubt on the AVP tour, and it's always packed. That is one of the best pizza places in the country.
Nice. You're going full Chicago-style, deep dish, yeah, like
absolutely.
Have one piece and you're about to barf?
100%. And you think, you know, it never passes the eye test. You always think, God, I can eat a large or even a medium, and you barely get through two.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, hang on, Jay. Here comes your music.
Nice.
This is it. It's been this way all season long. Unfortunately.
Boyce, can't you do something about this?
Yeah, this music in Chano's was running through my blood for about 3 years of my life.
Well, it got them the cover of Volleyball Magazine. USC continues to dominate, and so they get the music for our College Volleyball Weekly. The Net Live offers this feature each week in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association to give you the best of what has happened in the world of college volleyball, men's and women's. And it's men's continues to be on the program as playoffs are getting underway. Playoffs? They're getting underway this next week for MPSF, for Eva, for Meva, for everybody in their drive to the Final Four. So we'll welcome in our correspondents. Our usual correspondents, Jay Hossack, already on air, Rob Aspero, and Mike Sondheimer, who I think is online. Hopefully his...
I'm here.
A little bit early.
Howdy. Hey.
Well, late for the big finish. There it is, gentlemen. So welcome into the College Volleyball Week once again. And I wanted to start with Mike. Because, Mike, you know, I haven't had much to cheer about this week.
Nice lead-in.
Beat UCLA 3-1 in a meaningless match.
I think the Bruins are just getting ready for the Trojans, and if I was Bill Ferguson, the cover of Volleyball Magazine, I'd worry about Al Skates having a week to get ready for him.
Well, he's got a week to get ready for him, but he does have a team that has lost three on its way into the playoffs. That's not really how you'd want to enter the playoffs, is it?
I think the Bruins would rather play the Trojans than play at BYU. And if I was BYU, I'd worry a little bit about UC Santa Barbara, which has a veteran senior lineup that's capable of going off on a match, too. So there could be upsets of 1-2.
Okay, UC Santa Barbara also lost two coming in, so those folks put on the beef backup.
Look how many Connecticut lost going into the Big East tournament in basketball. Guess where they ended up?
I can't remember.
Different sport. I can understand if all the news that goes on in volleyball, it'd be tough to keep up with another sport.
That's right.
Yes,
hey, Andy. Guys, I think on the West Coast and in the MPSF, the most intriguing matchup to me is 4-5 UC Irvine and Hawaii.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Robbie, talk a little bit about that. You're with UC Irvine. You're required contractually to pick them, but at least give us an honest rundown of the match.
Well, I think when you go looking at the stats, it's Irvine has definitely the edge in most of the categories with the exception of the assists and the blocking column. But this match is going to be huge because it's going to feature two of the top offensive players, top four in the nation, and then the top two in the MPSF, and Jonas Umloft and Carson Clark, who are top in kills. Yeah, for Irvine, they are really getting into a really good rhythm. Since February 11th, they're 13-4. It's a different team that Hawaii's going to see. They have different players on the court between Will Thomas at libero, Kevin Wynn, your former intern in the middle. They're throwing some new combos out, so it'll be interesting to see how Hawaii is going to adjust. For Hawaii, you know, it's going to come down to someone else helping Jonas Umloft. And, you know, he's going to get his numbers. That's a given. But Stephen Hunt, their other outside with a Walker, are going to have to do something else. They're going to have to kick their games up to a new level and pass some really good balls and run in-system plays.
Hey, Robbie, it's Geeter. How important is the serving and passing battle going to be in that Irvine game, winning that? I know Hawaii scores from that service line pretty effectively.
Well, you know, Irvine, obviously, is with Carson Clark. He's in the top five in the MPSF of service aces, but he has a Spraw's bringing in another player, an outside, a freshman from New Berlin, Wisconsin, Jeremy Dano, who comes in and gets points. He just has such a wicked arm, and you know, teams are having a tough time running in-system plays with both those servers. And Irvine as a whole has really improved on serving just since that Hawaii matchup. Scott Kevorkian has really started unloading on his jump serves, their middle. And then you've got a few guys like Yoder who's just consistent at the outside. It's tough for teams to run in-system plays with the serving that Irvine has developed in the last like month and a half, 2 months.
Jay, moving over to the East Coast, you guys had a couple of tough losses this week. You went down 3-0 to Ball State and then came back from down 2-0 to win in five at IPFW. That seems like it's not the way you want to go into the finals.
No, you know, that's a good point. It's not. It's definitely not a good momentum going into the IBAs. However, I will say this. Ball State historically has always been a very strong program. And even this year, they went into the Hawaii Outrigger and they beat Hawaii in three straight there. And so I think the difference with Ball State is you're not quite sure which team you're going to get. You're either going to get the team that can go all the way through the MEVA tournament and possibly get into the Final Four, or you get a team that could lose to a small end Division I program on any given night. So we ran into a buzzsaw, and it's senior night, and there's a lot of emotions riding. And Ball State, hats off to them. They did really, really well against us and just kind of gave us a lunch. And, you know, Arnie's Army, you go into IPFW at any given night, and that guy's got that team ready to go. So, again, you know, it's senior night. Yeah, it's a hostile environment, and, you know, it came out in the first game. They had us down 9-1, I believe, in the first game, and we called a timeout. And, you know, the guys looked a little rattled, but they knew that they'd get something somewhere down the line. They get some opportunities. They'd take care of it. And, you know, the second game, they got us again. And you go into the locker room, and, you know, there's some F-bombs dropping from some of the guys and some looks from some of the guys. And next thing you know, we're heading into the fifth, and, you know, it was a dogfight. And, you know, again, IPFW is a team that I'm telling you right now, I don't think IPFW is a shoe over for any team they face. I kind of think they can make it to the finals of the MEVA and do some damage. I'd look out for that team.
Looking at the EIVA Conference Championship bracket, Jay, you guys are into the semifinal. You're undefeated in the EVA. You're 30-4 in sets. Is this a guaranteed pass to the finals?
No. Any smart coach would tell you absolutely not. Do I like our chances? Yeah, I like our chances, but it's never a shoo-in. You never want to say that. And, you know, George Mason can be hot depending on the night you get him. And, you know, Rutgers has streaks. St. Francis on any given night can be pretty good. So I would definitely not say it's a shoo-in. I like our chances, but, you know, that being
said. Oh, Jay, come on. You got Pav Power. You guys are good.
Yeah, Pav Power, plus we're hosting, you know, both the EIVAs and the Final Four. Like I said, I like our chances. I definitely wouldn't I wouldn't bet against us. Let's put it that way.
Go ahead, Sondy.
The Long Beach State-Stanford match. I think that's one that everyone looks at, possible upset.
Oh, yeah, I think definitely. The biggest thing is Stanford has got as good passing and offense. You have to serve really tough against the Cardinal, and what you have to do is break down the freshmen and not let Mikowski, Ellis in the middle, and Cook on the opposite hurt you, because Lawson and McLaughlin are going to get their kills, and Barry's a nice job setting. But Long Beach, you know, they're so up and down also. I mean, that's the whole thing. There's so many up and down volleyball teams. I didn't think Penn State would lose to Ball State, but I think Ohio State was going to lose to Penn State or Lewis, and everybody's beaten everybody else. I mean, USC is unbeaten at home, but they've got a couple road losses. Who would have thought they lost to Pepperdine earlier in the year? And BYU almost got them twice. So for Long Beach, it's just a matter of they play their best match and they can break Stanford down a little bit, then they have a shot at beating them. And again, I think the question I want to ask Jay is, did Penn State, by losing the Ball State, blow the number 3 seed, or now they're looking at number 4 seed now?
You know, that's a great question, Sonny. And before I get to that, I'll answer that whole Long Beach Stanford thing. Long Beach owns the season or series with those guys. They're 2-0 against them. So I think that's a great call. I think Long Beach State could be the upsetter in that one. But as far as the number 3 and the number 4 seed goes, you know, to be honest with you, we were in the conversation, obviously, after beating Ohio State. I think everybody thought that there was a real possibility that we could get that 3 seed. Now that we've lost to Ball State, depending on how Ohio State does in the MIVA, if they win out, then I think it's a no-brainer. I think they get the number 3 seed. But if they don't win out, then that brings the conversation back up as to who does get that bid from that tournament. The thing that we always say is that the match that's going to be the hardest to win is the one that you're expected to win. And I think when you get out here, if USC is the number 1 seed and if we're the number 4 seed, you know, everybody's going to put their money on USC. And I don't know, any given night, anybody can win. And we've seen that all season long. And, Sonny, you just brought that up again. And Hawaii just beat USC in Hawaii.
Right.
And so, I like our chances. If we play the way that we've played in practice and the way that we play against certain matches this year, I like our chances against anybody in the country. And
It'll be the 30th anniversary of one of the biggest moments in college volleyball history when Penn State beat USC at Penn State in the semifinals, first time an East team ever got to the finals.
No, wow. That's a great call.
Great history.
Robbie, I'll throw this out there to you, but I want to hear from the other guys too. Assuming USC wins out, is the at-large bid guaranteed to BYU at number 2?
That's going to be a tough call. Head-to-head, gosh, it'd be a toss-up between BYU and Stanford. Stanford's got to really take care of business if they want to make it real tough for the polling staff. So, I don't think it's a lock, honestly, because of the inconsistency that you cited. You know, if Stanford makes a huge run, it's going to be tough for that committee.
Agreed.
Right. I think right now Stanford's 2-0 versus BYU. Even though BYU finished second, I think BYU has got to get to the finals of the MPSF if they want to get in, and they need to hope that SC is the other team in the finals. If it's BYU, SC, and that BYU will have had 2 close losses to SC and a win over Stanford at a neutral site, I think that gets them in. But if Stanford wins against BYU one more time, I think Stanford's got the at-large.
All right,
be whether Irvine can get there. And Irvine, I think, will have a legitimate shot at beating USC if USC is hosting.
Yeah, Irvine could be an interesting one. The new poll just out. Southern California takes home 14 first-place votes and the number 1. BYU gets 2 first-place votes, remains in second. UC Irvine up to 3rd above Stanford, who is now ranked 4th. 5th, Long Beach State. 6th, Hawaii. 7th, Santa Barbara. And 8th, UCLA. Ohio State, Penn State, Pepperdine, the next 3 out there. UC Irvine, definitely the hot team, 1-6 coming into this event. BYU has won 7, so a couple of good streaks there. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that second seed just seems to be up for grabs, and all dependent on what happens starting this Saturday when those quarterfinals happen. April 23rd, they're going to be at SC, at Irvine, at Stanford, and at BYU, all times 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock
all good matches
for BYU.
All good matches, all possible upsets.
Yeah,
yep.
I need to give a little point to the Irvine match because they had to move it to a smaller venue. So if you want to go, there's only about just over 700 seats available in Crawford Court. So get your tickets; they're available now.
Really? They're putting that match in Crawford Court?
Yeah, in your old digs, Jay.
Oh my God! Why? You know what? Here's my question: is it because the Hawaiian group or the Hawaiian they have that thing every year where they have a kind of like a clinic or a gathering? I guess is the best way to put it. Is that why?
Even better, it's a cheerleading competition.
Oh, for crying out loud!
Well, we know where Jay. Yeah, we know where he's going to be before the match. We know where Robbie's going. Robbie be scouting out talent.
That's so unfortunate. Oh, I wish you guys were having that, the Bren.
Kevin, Matt Boyce, you'll notice that I sat a couple plays out. There were a lot of chefs in the kitchen for this segment. I've been trying to stay in tune with the users in the chat room. We've gone from 80 to 77. At one point it was down to 72, but it's climbing back up. My takeaway from the segment was Scott Kevorkian, don't know who he is, but his new nickname is the Docker.
Absolutely appreciate that one.
Oh, my goodness. Well, where are you guys going to be at your individual respective places this next week? I assume, Mike, UCLA, UC Irvine, and Penn State.
Penn State's got a bye. Yep.
Yeah, I have Easter weekend off.
Very nice. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Oh, no predictions? We're not going to get any predictions, Barney?
Oh, predictions. Well, let's
come
go
on.
With predictions then. Okay.
Come on.
Sounds good.
So
let's run down the MPSF. UCLA, USC. Go around the horn. Start with Mike.
UCLA.
Okay.
Al Skates will have something up his sleeve, and Bill Ferguson, who listens to us, better be ready.
Ooh.
Okay. Jay?
I'm going to go with SC just on – I think UCLA is imploding. I think there's some internal things going on there. So I'm going to go SC.
Okay. Robbie?
I'll agree with Jay on that one, SC.
All right. Geeter, you got to get your pick in there.
You talking USC, UCLA? Sorry, the wife
yep.
called in. I'm going to go with USC, without a doubt. There's nobody that's going to stop them.
I will also pick USC. That just seems like a no-brainer. Sorry, Mike, but
that's
I know.
That's okay. I understand.
All right, quarterfinal number two at UC Irvine, number five, Hawaii.
Can I have
a
pick?
Oh, sorry, boys.
The listeners go up or down?
I'm going to choose the sport. I think the sport's going to win tomorrow night. Or
nice.
Between USC, UCLA, whenever it is. I won't be there because I'm a single father. Go ahead.
Nice. Rainbows and ponies, everyone. Rainbows
Love volleyball.
And ponies.
Love volleyball, killing Matt Boyce's marriage single-handedly. Number five, Hawaii. Number four, UC Irvine. Mike, start with you again. Same order.
I love UC Irvine, a small gym with the way they can serve.
Yeah. If it were in the Bren Center, I might have a different thought, but I'm going to go with, because it's in Crawford and because Irvine loves that little place, I'm going to go Irvine.
And I, too, will obviously have to go with Irvine, but because they're just in a really good groove right now. Looks like they're clicking, and it's the Spurs got them running at a good pace and running in system plays.
I'll tell you what, Barney, I don't know how far I'm going to pick them, but I'm going to ride them this week for sure. UC Irvine, I think Carson Clark is going to start playing great. I think this is when your star players start to rise, and I think he's going to be one of those guys. I think they're going to start serving well, and I think they're going to be able to pass a wise ball off that tough service line, and I love Crawford. I agree with all you guys. That is going to be a huge home court advantage for the Anteaters.
Yeah,
two things winning that night, UC Irvine and wrist away. You're going to see a lot of wrist away that night.
Especially with Carson Clark, that left-handed. Hey, I like the call on the arena. This cheerleading thing is scheduled rather precipitously because I think you have a team in Hawaii that is used to playing in giant arenas, perhaps more comfortable, going to be in that small,
yep.
confined space. And it definitely is a different feel when you're in that little tiny gym. So I'm going
to
go with
Jay Hossick Hot Box is what we used to call it, right?
Oh, I love that place. I love Crawford. It's such a great place to play.
I just remember hitting a ball off Chris Harger's face that went into the upper deck. That's all I remember.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was there for that match.
Actually, I take it back. It might have been Harger hit off my face that went up into the upper deck.
Now the reality comes in.
Yeah, your eye was kind of closed. I remember that, Barney. I didn't want to embarrass you on your own show.
Yeah, I suffered a concussion, so like Bradshaw, I'm having trouble remembering things. Quarterfinal number three, Long Beach State at number three, Stanford. Well, number four, Stanford now. Mike.
Shandy?
I'm going with Stanford over Long Beach at home.
Ooh. I'm going upset special. I'm taking Long Beach State over Stanford.
I like it. We're getting a little division here.
You know, I'm going to go with the emotional win for Stanford, being that it's going to be in Maples, and that crowd there is tough to play in front of.
Hopefully they bring the R2-D2 out with a keg inside of it, which
exactly.
is awesome.
Oh, my goodness. Stanford's a weird place. Peter?
Barney, I'm going with Long Beach State. I think they're going to score the upset in the run by the Stanford Cardinals.
All right. I can't pick the tree, so I'm going with Long Beach, taking Long Beach to win, being that they own the season series, and I don't like the tree because it's got a stupid look on its face.
Yeah, Long Beach State will win even if they lose the match because they know about the Rosencrown Pub in downtown Palo Alto, and that place always wins.
Boys, you're our own little slice of Charlie Sheen here. I like that.
Or the Oasis. The Oasis is a good joint, too.
At BYU, UC Santa Barbara and Jeff Menzel walk into BYU, number two, in their gym, and that's a rowdy place to play. Mike?
Well, since Santa Barbara is known for hitting more than serving, I'm going to go with the Gauchos in a major upset.
Ooh.
Nice.
Ooh. Boy, you know what? Sondi, you beat me to the punch. I like Santa Barbara, too, and here's the reason why. Menzel is going to literally jump through the roof, and he's going to – I mean, there's very little air up there, as everybody knows. So he's going to get an extra 16 inches on his vert, and he's going to go over the top of their big block. No, I call Santa Barbara in the upset. I like them. I like the way they're working right now, and I think Rick has got them going in the right direction. Even though they lost recently, I think that's going to be motivation. So I take the upset too.
Robbie?
You know, I have to go against you guys and go with BYU. I think Otavio Souza has really stepped up his game out as of late, and that and complementing with Futhi Tavanan in the middle, it's going to be tough to get a ball by that already. They're in the top conference of the block. So with Taylor Sander and Rob Stowell just lighting up out the pins, it's going to be too tough. I think it's going to be a sweep, BYU.
Heat City.
As much as I love Ricky McLaughlin and the job he has done this year, going to BYU, too tough of a task. I'm taking the Cougars, and I agree 100%. The freshman Taylor Sander, he's going to be a nationally known name at the end of this tournament, without a doubt. I'm taking the Cougars.
Boys?
Santa Barbara, saw them play SC on Saturday night. I'm going with Santa Barbara winning the match and losing because they're staying at the Comfort Inn.
Oh, my goodness. Those of you that remember SNL from years ago and Caveman Lawyer, I think that Menzel is kind of caveman opposite. But he's not going to have enough around him, I don't think, to defeat BYU. Seen BYU play a couple times this year, and I'm going to have to take the Cougars in that matchup. All right, let's move on over to the EVA for a second. I don't know if we can pick these all the way down, but I'm going to pick Penn State to be victorious this weekend.
So will I. I guarantee RJ, I'll make sure they win.
I'll tell you what, guys, if we don't win this weekend, being that we don't have a match, we got other issues we've got to deal with. So.
All right. Well, I don't know what we're going to pick outside the rest of the top 10. It's going to be – Jay, maybe you can give us the rundown on Rutgers, St. Francis, George Mason, NYU, Springfield, and Juniata.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. Number two, George Mason takes on number seven seed NYU. George Mason's going to take that without a doubt. Battles of the D3s, the last year that there are Division III teams in our conference. Springfield against Juniata. I'm going to go with Springfield. They just lost the national championship for the D3 Moultons this past weekend.
Season for them. You lose a championship and then continue on in some playoffs. It's very odd.
Yeah, that's been their MO for a number of years. It's a good recruiting tool for them, but no more after this year. So, and then you got Rutgers against St. Francis. I'm going to go with Rutgers. I like some of their players. They got some good pin hitters, and their setter, Jeff Zornig, does a real nice job. So I'm going to take them. And then after that, we'll let the chips fall where they may.
All right, so that set up a Penn State Rutgers and George Mason Springfield matchup for next week. We'll check in and see how that goes. Gentlemen, thanks so much. Great information. We'll look forward to hearing about the playoffs. Should be a good discussion next week.
Excellent, guys. Awesome. Have a good one.
Thanks, all right,
guys.
Carly,
take care.
Buckley,
bye.
On
bye-bye.
His way out the door. Good stuff from all those guys. I sure enjoy hearing about the high-level volleyball that's being played. The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. We're going to be right back. We've got Albert Hanneman. He's been waiting patiently in the queue, and we appreciate that about him. He's going to be joining us here on the show to talk about his National Volleyball League. He's going to be one of the big players coming up here in the sport of beach volleyball. We'll hear more about the sponsors, the bonus pool, the possibilities, and the players' reaction to it all. Right here, The Net Live, back in a minute. Welcome back into the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Myself, Kevin Barnett, sitting in here in the studio all alone. Chris Geeter McGee on the line along with Matt Boyce. Been an interesting show so far. Had a lot of discussion about upcoming events. The College Volleyball Weekly playoffs kicking off this week. Going to be exciting for the men. We had Rick Dunitz from Dig Pink and the Side Out Foundation talking about cancer research and raising money for that. Really a special thing. And a lot of other fun things here we've been talking about. And, of course, update for those of you who have been wondering, joined the show late, Stacey Sikora, injured in a bus crash last week down in Brazil, in a medically induced coma for 3 days now, been brought out of that and improving, expected to make a full recovery from the information we have currently. So our thoughts go out to Stacey Sikora and her family and teammates down there in Brazil. Hopefully she is back playing soon. But I want to bring in our next guest, Geeter. You want to give him an introduction here?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring in our friend. He is now the CEO and I believe the commissioner of the National Volleyball League, a former AVP player, had a fantastic career at the University of Hawaii. He's a former Hermosa Beach champion. Let's bring in Albert Hanneman.
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Good. Good to have you here back on the show.
Yeah, thanks. Geet, congrats on Luca. I think that's awesome that you can only produce girls just like me.
Should I have one more like you, try to go for that third girl?
You'll guaranteed have another girl, buddy.
Not even a question. Albert, how excited are you? I know you have your first qualifier for the Baltimore event coming up this weekend in Manhattan Beach. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, man, we're really excited. You know, it's been a lot of work, as you can imagine, the last 6 months, but it's finally going to happen this weekend in Manhattan Pier. We're going to have the first qualifier for the Baltimore event. So, you know, we'll have the top eight will get out, and it's a 16-team draw, two-day event in Baltimore. It'll be at Baltimore Beach on Friday and then at the Preakness on Saturday.
So, Albert, who are the eight teams that are in? Is there a place to see who's already in, or how does that work?
Yeah, you know what? They're signing up Wednesday by 5 o'clock, and then we'll have that, and we'll post those teams on the website.
The National Volleyball League.com. So it's going to be 16 men, Albert, and 16 women's team?
That's it.
Tell us what's been going on lately over this last month. I know you've been grinding away. You wanted to talk about some of the new sponsors. Fill us in on just how this has gone through March and April for you.
Yeah, I had a fun week last week. I had a six-day, four-city tour. Started in Aspen to meet our promoter out there, Leon Fell, with the Motherlode, and you know, wanted to make sure we had everything in line for what we're doing with him. We're doing a big vacation, volleyball vacation style event. You know, he kind of epitomizes the whole lifestyle of beach volleyball with what they do over there. Every division, grass, beach, the whole deal. He's been done such a great job with it for so many years. We were excited to partner with him. So went down there for a couple of days. Of course, they had 14 inches of snow, and we had a six-hour layover in Denver. But, you know, got in there, got it done. I went to Miami the next day with Chris Colgan and went over the site, did a site inspection, and went to the Gansevoort and STK and got all of our stuff in line there with what we're doing in Miami, and then went to Baltimore for 2 days and went to Pimlico and saw that sweet horse track there and, you know, got that all worked out with our promoter out there, Don Abramson, and then went to New York and closed a couple sponsors and got home Saturday just in time for Maya's volleyball tournament.
So tell us about some of the new sponsors, Albie.
Well, we signed Wilson, which was huge for us. So that was a really big one that we were excited about. You know, we want to, you know, use the best ball that they've established over the AVP for so many years. That you know, so we're going to be with Wilson and doing some pretty cool social media campaigns and contests with the fans to name the new ball, and they're going to fly them out to Long Beach for our last event in September. And that was a big one, Gee, because you know we want to use the best ball, and the players all preferred Wilson, and, you know, we asked everyone what they wanted to do, and, you know, we talked to the other ball manufacturers, and Wilson was the best play for us. Obviously, Australian Gold is a big one for us, too. We're just on the Celebrity Apprentice, and, you know, getting a lot of good publicity with those guys, so we'll have our Sunblock, finally a Sunblock sponsor. Go figure out how long it's been since we've had one. We're excited about that. And then we just signed another company called Grand Touring Vodka. They have a lot of, and they're what they're trying to do with their brand is exactly what we're doing. And you know, they're about the lifestyle and young and fun and, you know, really great people with those guys. And then EFX as well with the hologram, you know, bracelets that we're doing with those guys. So we're pretty excited. And there's a lot that I wanted to be able to tell you today, and I know Barney's like, we want some more info, but we have a lot of brands that we're talking about, you know, beer, car, a lot of other that we can't talk about yet, unfortunately. But, you know, like I said, we'll be putting it up on the website, and I'll call you guys as soon as we get those locked up.
Albie, as far as the sponsors go and the sponsor money, prize money for the players, is all that guaranteed? Are you fully funded for this season?
Yeah, we're fully funded. I mean, we started, you know, we got investment money first so that we would be okay and not have to take any sponsors. I mean, we're really trying to create the brand and the image, being careful with who we're working with because, you know, we're looking at this long term and we wanted to make sure we were doing it right. So, you know, we're all funded. We even added $300,000 into prize money and a bonus pool for the players just to make it a little sweeter this summer. So, you know, it's nice to be on, you know, already be fully funded and not have to worry about chasing anything. You know, it's a good position to be in.
Are the deals that you're signing with sponsors and the relationships that you're developing, are those meeting your expectations, or are you still suffering from a little bit of the economic downturn? How willing are people to really commit the money that you're looking for your particular sponsorship slots?
Well, we're realistic, you know. We haven't proven anything yet, and I understand that, you know, we have to get through this first event in May before you can really see what we're doing. And we have so many great things in place that I've never seen in my 18 years playing on the AVP. So I'm excited to be able to show potential sponsors and sponsors that have already taken the leap with us what we can do. You know, we have projections that we want to hit, and we're, you know, three quarters of the way there already. And you know, we haven't really hit that yet too hard because we want to make sure that this event is exactly what we want. We have a couple months after the Preakness event before we're going to be at Malibu, so we figure we have a lot of time to, you know, to really go after and first show the quality of events that we can put on and then, you know, give them a little taste of what's to come.
Hey, Albie, for those people that are, you know, used to going to Hermosa, Manhattan, and the people that you've seen for years that come to the events, what will it look like visually when you're in Malibu? What is your vision for what the tour will look like when people show up?
Well, we're not doing the big stadiums, you know. We found that not to be very cost-effective this first year, so we're going into these promoter festival-style events that are already existing. So, I mean, our expenses are less than a third of what it would have cost, and we're going to be able to put on more of a lifestyle event. So, you know, we're talking about VIP suites, Geet, where, you know, we're going to have umbrellas and couches and just make it a really cool vibe out there on the beach where the players and fans and sponsors are all, you know, having a good time together instead of, you know, separating the players' tent, as you know, is, you know, 50 yep. yards away from everything else. I mean, we're going to keep it all close and tight and really focus on the lifestyle of the events.
I think that's going to make Barnett happy.
Yeah. You got to keep the players in touch with the other folks, the participants, and the fans together. Now, I had a question about that Malibu event, because this is an event that was planned last year for the AVP but kind of fell apart. Is that something that you've been able to work through the permitting process and make sure the site's ready and that's a go for sure this year?
Yeah, you know, that was definitely, we wanted to make sure that we were on the same page, and Scott Hubble, who owns BeachSports.org and the CBVA, we did a partnership with those guys a couple months ago so that, you know, we wanted to make sure that the problem in the past or last year with that Malibu event is that they weren't able to bring in the stadiums, and, you know, we were on the same page from the beginning, so when we had the discussions, like, well, what do we need to do to make sure that this happens so that, you know, we're not going to put anything on our schedule that's going to get canceled. I mean, we had to guarantee that we were safe to do that event. So, you know, it's a surf and sport festival that they were already doing, and we're just adding volleyball to the existing event, and that's what we're doing with all of our events.
Albie,
what
about streaming live or any sort of television coverage that'll be available for your event so people can see these cool lifestyle happenings?
Yeah, and you know, Barney, when you played, I mean, we're gonna have every match on four courts streaming live, and we'll have it archived on the site, so players and fans can actually go back and watch it whenever they want. We are talking to ESPN right now, and as of Friday, it looks like that is gonna go through. Really excited about the opportunities there on ESPN3, ESPN International, and then you know, hoping to get on ESPN2. By our second event. So just being in the ESPN family, I mean, they have not had beach volleyball in such a long time. It just legitimizes us pretty quickly, you know, and that's one of the biggest things that just happened in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'll tell you, last year when we started the year on ESPN and ABC, Albert, the one thing I told people was I never had so many people text me or email me after from around the country that were finally able to see the events at the same time. I always thought that was very important for the beach volleyball community because everyone can't go to every event. So it's real nice.
Yeah, and I love that mosaic thing, you know, and we're investing in that, you know. I mean, four courts, I mean, that's one way that we're actually monetizing it because we're going to give sponsors an opportunity to basically own one of those four courts. And so we'll integrate the commercials and everything else in that live streaming episode. So, you know, I love the fact that, you know, you can go back and watch it, you know, live or have it archived.
Albie, Matt Boyce, I got your message about being the voice of the tour, and I want to be sensitive because Chris is on here, but maybe we could talk more about that offline.
Yeah, I think, you know, Boyce, I think that's great. You're happy to carry Geeter's bags and have him keep mentoring you. I have no problem with that.
Albie, a couple of questions from our listeners. How's it going with the Coastal Commission? Are you finding you know, all the fees and all the problems that we've had in the past? How's that going for you?
You know, I'm not feeling that at all because you know, like I said, with our relationship with the CBVA and with you know, beach sports, those guys have been around for so many years, over 25 years, have built those relationships and done great things for the beach in general, the beaches in California. So, you know, we're not trying to do too much, Geet. I mean, we're not coming in there with the stadium, you know, setup that's going to really raise some eyebrows. I mean, we're just trying to come in and run some quality events and share, you know, volleyball with everybody in a different way. So I haven't had any issues with that, and it's been, you know, refreshing to know that the people that we're working with can handle, you know, all those situations.
Yeah, and what about gear? I know people are talking about, you know, T-shirts and hats and wanting to see where they can buy that. Will that eventually be able to happen on the website?
Yeah, and I'm really excited about that, too. I mean, putting together, we've spent months putting together an AVP apparel line. I'm sorry, an NPL apparel line. And, you know, we're going to have it at Manhattan this weekend. We'll have some stuff available, and then it'll be on the website as soon as the website relaunches in May. Right now the website's up and it's running and we have tons of information on there, but we've been spending the last couple of months with a giant relaunch, which is going to be really cool.
I like the countdown to the Preakness. That is awesome.
Yeah, countdown to Preakness. Now let me ask you this, though. You get these emails and texts. I know you get them too, and so do I. Albie, what's going on May 15th on the AVP.com website? Have you heard anything about that?
Oh, Geet, I tell you, it's one of those things that I know too much information and I don't want to know. It's you know, this propaganda. I don't understand why anyone would be putting things out there that can confuse the fans and players. And it's more of confusing the fans right now and potential sponsors. I mean, it's the last thing you want is talking about something that's not happening. It's just a date that they threw up there because they were talking to some people and wanted to make it look like it was still alive, is what I was told. It's you know, it's one of those things that we just keep going through and hope that, you know, the people that are doing that understand that it's not helping the sport at all.
Is it better for beach volleyball if the AVP moniker goes away?
What's that, Barney?
Is it better for beach volleyball if the AVP moniker goes away?
I mean, I love the AVP, you know. I mean, I owe so much to it, and I wish it would have made it through, you know. But it is what it is, and you know, we needed to change. And I think it's confusing, you know. I think the brand alone, you know, there needs to be a fresh start now, and a lot of us, you know, had to go through that last year again, and the last thing we need is to have some confusion out there in the marketplace. So, you know, it was a great run, and now let's see what we can do.
Hey, Albert.
Last question.
Real quick, Barney. Albert, how much have you had to work with Steve and Billy over at Corona and Dave at USAV? It seems like everyone's kind of worked their schedules out from what it seems like online when I look at schedules.
You know, I really like those guys, and you know, I think it's great that we're all trying to you know, offer as many events as possible for the players to actually make a living doing this. And you know, ultimately, I think, you know, one of us will be offering a lot more tournaments, and I just don't think anyone needs to try to dominate the sport right now. It's better for players actually to have more events to play in and not have to sign a contract to stick with one or the other. You know, I've been working with them a lot, and you know, we're trying to all work so that there none of our events are going to conflict, or at least do the best we can. And everyone's been supportive with each other, so it's been a refreshing experience.
All right, Albert, thanks for talking with us. One last question before you go. Matt Gardhoff wants to know if he can put your likeness on the next wheel of Scott Fortune.
God, love him to do that. That makes me laugh every time I see something that guy comes up with.
Excellent. Albert Hanneman is the owner of the National Volleyball League upcoming this summer. Thanks so much for joining us once again, Albie. Come back anytime you have new news.
Yeah, thanks again, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Albert.
Right. Nice job, Albie.
Thanks, good boys. Stuff. Keep saying to Geeter, he's your boss.
Boys, good try, though. I like that you tried to get in there. The Net Live, we'll be right back. We've got Cal Wickens coming up from the D3
Hey, Maddie, you can dominate me because I'm getting off now. I got to go. Later, boys.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot. See you. All right. Cal Wickens, other side of the break. Right back. Welcome back in the Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Just got rid of Geeter, but he was here for most of the show. Just finished talking to Albert Hanneman, owner of National Volleyball League. Had a good conversation. Rick Donitz from the Dig Pink organization, Side Out Foundation, raising money for cancer research. And Matt Boyce has been here with us on the line the entire time trying to usurp any job that Chris Geeter McGee has. But I don't know if you've had much success, Geeter, Boyce here.
No, it's been a severe pleasure nonetheless.
We appreciate you sitting in and being here and being our own little section of weirdness in the volleyball world. I loved your stuff in College Volleyball Weekly. That was classic.
Oh, thank you.
Our next guest is a native of Santa Monica, California. He's the coach and director at Rochester Volleyball Club. He has been for more than two decades. He's the head coach of both the men's and women's teams at Nazareth College in Rochester, New York. He founded the men's program in 2005, and within 3 years, he had his team ranked number one. His team made their first ever appearance in the Molten Final Four last year, going on an incredible run at the end of the season. And now in just the seventh year of the program, the Soaring Eagles brought home their first national championship this weekend, defeating the number one ranked Springfield College Pride 3-1. Welcome to the program, Cal Wickens. Cal.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for being here on the Net.
Absolutely.
Well, congratulations on the big win, and what a great weekend. Tell us a little bit about the two matches you played to take home the title.
Sure, that's a good thing. But first, you guys got to tell me how the weather is, because for us, it's snowing here.
Well, it's kind of a crummy day here. It's cloudy and about 63, so we're bumming.
You know, it's just basically everything here just turned into snow after the good weekend. So I just want to make sure you guys were really in California and really having a good time.
It's good. We haven't mentioned it lately, so it's always good for those that are listening around the world and mostly in my old Midwest to know that, it's a rough day here.
Well, don't worry. It's snowing there, too.
Excellent. So two victories on the weekend and a championship. Boy, that must have been quite the ride for your boys.
It was. You know, we've worked hard like the whole year, and you know, it works with young athletes that have never been to the or gotten to the pinnacle championship. Guys were all very focused. You know, they're excited. We were happy to be here. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, now let's play ball. And you know, fortunately for our guys, they really stepped up. They did a good job.
So you take home the victory against Springfield 3-1. What was the key to that match? Springfield ranked number one, multiple-time national champion, really good program. What were the areas that you focused on with your team to attack?
You know, for us against Springfield, those guys come in with a lot of confidence, and we knew that, they're going to serve big, And, you know, they have the type of team where two All-American middles, which, you know, dominate games, and, you know, player of the year type Albert Bravo. So for us, we had to, you know, our focus was coming and serve big. We're in our own gym. We knew there were going to be 1,000 people here, which is all it can fit, and everybody'd be crazy, but it was like we had to pass and serve with them, you know, which is like, I guess you could say anybody would like to do that, but for us, it was important because we knew they were going to come in serving the big ball.
You guys were the host of the tournament and therefore received the automatic bid. Is this a good system? I mean, obviously it yielded good results for you this year, but is that a good system for rewarding hosting?
Well, you know, I mean, for the whoever ends up hosting, and especially somebody like us that was an underdog, as soon as we got that host, it was like, oh, they're in, they bought their way in type thing. And, you know, so for us, it was all about, hey, let's prove it with our record. Let's play the best teams we can play in the country. And, you know, at the end of the year, we're in a conference that has 43 teams called the NECFA. So at the end of the year, which is 2 weeks before the national tournament, we go down there and play that, which was at Stevens Tech. And for us, it was like, listen, guys, we need to win this just to make sure we can say to ourselves, and this is at the start of the year, we need to win this to say, hey, we deserve to be here. So it was kind of like getting two bids, the automatic and the bid that, you know, we bought with coming into the Final Four. I don't know that the system is perfect. The point is when you know, it's all we had to offer. You know, D3, it were just limitations and not having, a sponsor that was any better than the Molten, which was awesome. I mean, they're great, but, you know, I don't know that there's ever been an option. You know, now that the NCAA has taken over, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit easier on everybody because, you know, you can be in a tournament, you've got to get your natural bid or your automatic, and then, so the system has changed. It's no longer going to be that way. But for us, it was all about winning that next tournament and saying, hey, we're ready to play, and fortunately, we were able to do that.
You mentioned one of the changes that's coming with the NCAA sanctioning and taking over the D3 tournament next year. Talk about some of the other things that will be altered and some of the positives and negatives of being now included with the NCAA.
Well, you know, in all NCAA tournaments, it's predicated on, participation, how big the tournament's going to be. You know, next year there's going to be 9 teams and it's one weekend, which is a pretty tough schedule if you're not used to it. I mean, on our side of the D3 thing, being involved with the NECFA that we were, what happened was it was like we're used to playing 4 matches a weekend to get as many contests because, you know, it's all about participation in many ways for the D3. You know, the rules that got changed or the meetings that they had this weekend, they wanted to see where the alignment was changing from a 6-1 substitution to maybe a 12-1, you know, a 12 substitution. Which I think that, you know, that's where the most positive thing for D3 volleyball, because really all these new schools, these smaller schools, very academic East Coast schools, they want to see 10, 11 kids playing a match. So I think that's probably going to be one of the biggest things that have been talked about is getting away from that 6 substitution D3 tournament that we just had and getting to a 12 substitution where, you know, you can play around with the libero, maybe still have a 6-2, put in some unique little SWAT guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about the participation, how that changes the game. We've seen that in the women's game where now they have a tremendous amount of subbing and a lot of specialization going on. And one of the topics I want to talk to you about and how this will change now, given the substitution proposal, talk about recruiting to a D3 school. It seems like a combination of salesmanship and luck of just who walks through the door, but talk about that process.
Well, since that there's no athletic money that's given out to these D3 schools, what you're going to see here is, first of all, most of these kids are coming to these schools to be involved with, whether it's a private school, more academic environment. You know, it's all about these large rosters of these kids coming to school to get a degree and go on to their next life. And, you know, if you come out in the East Coast, which it's hard to say if you've never spent time in that D3 volleyball, being in California, you know, I just didn't understand it. But being out here, I mean, there are some great schools, beautiful, stunning campuses You know, you have this fantastic environment that fosters good volleyball. You know, on that sense, you know, for us, it's like that rule change is going to get these small schools, and instead of having, you know, 57 volleyball teams in 3 years, we're hoping to have 80, 85, which I think for Division I, for Division II, and just volleyball in general, this is like the last frontier, Division III men's volleyball. And all these kids that go to JOs, I mean, it's just been limited. Club volleyball, the NERSA thing, or go to Southern California or stay in that West. So it's going to be exciting. You're going to see great growth, and you're going to see a lot of participation.
We've talked a lot of times on this program about the growth of volleyball, and I participated in a D3 coaches call last week, and they were asking me about what I thought would help the sport grow. And one of the things I put out there was that I think you have to grow the men's side of the game because women don't spectate in the same numbers that men do. Whether they're participating in a particular sport or other sports, by and large, women don't watch in the same numbers that men do. And I think that if you could get more men participating in the sport, you would go a long ways to increasing the fan base for volleyball. You can react to that, but also tell me what you think needs to be done to increase the visibility of volleyball as a whole, but also the men's side.
Well, you know, I think, one, the buy-in, the more schools that are participating on an NCAA level or an NCAA-sanctioned tournament, I think you're going to get more visibility. If you go to these teams' websites, the club teams, let's just say in the Midwest, the old Ohio Valley, Wisconsin, your old neighborhood, you know, you're not going to see the same thing from a club sponsorship in their athletic departments as you are going to see it from a school like, you know, Nazareth, MIT, Stevens, Vassar, you know, some of these schools, Springfield for sure, you know, where, I mean, it's just promoted differently, it's supported differently, and just people attending. You know, and I think once all of a sudden these teams start turning these D3 programs, the visibility in those neighborhoods. I mean, we had this event this weekend. We did a 12 and under clinic to go with it for free, and we had 80 kids. You know, we did a coaches nice. Clinic and those things. And all of a sudden the visibility of volleyball, here's a scary one for you that you guys out on the West Coast wouldn't have a problem with. We had 5 days of news coverage and 4 days in the newspaper, and that's never happened. And so it's just the visibility. It's contagious after a weekend like this weekend. I mean, it worked out really well for us. And in general, that means for volleyball.
Even with the national team playing in Long Beach this upcoming year, I doubt that they will get a couple of days of coverage or on the front page of the sports section from the LA Times. I doubt that's actually going to happen. We understand that the scene for your championship this past weekend was great. Much like we talked about the club championships, but you guys were sold out, packed in there in your gym, but it only seated 1,100 people. But talk about the scene and the support from the community that you received for the sport and the exposure that you got just there.
Well, I mean, for us, we used to run some events where we brought Penn State, UCLA, USC, different schools. Marv used to bring his team out every 3 years. We called it the preview to the Final Four. But I'll tell you what, you know, we'd get 500, 600 people come out and watch the East meets the West and, you know, a preseason event. You know, last night here and the day before and the Friday night, I mean, having 1,100 people was just incredible. And, I mean, it was packed. Yeah, I mean,
it feel like
standing room only. They had to kick people out.
Awesome.
And, you know, it was kind of crazy that we just kind of tied everybody up, and then everybody came in, and it, you know, the event lasted, and then, you know, the final points, you know, we felt like we were in ESPN. And in a good way, there were little kids there, all those little kids from the 12th clinic. They had a great time, and like I said, the overflow of it worked out really well.
You're listening to Net Live. We're talking to Cal Wickens, head coach of the now champion Soaring Eagles of Nazareth College. Just took home the Division III championship on the men's side this past weekend. Coach, you began this program just a few years ago, 7 years ago. How supportive was the university of your efforts to get a men's program going inside of the school?
Well, we were pretty blessed because Pete, our athletic director, was a volleyball person. I mean, I was involved with the community, with club ball, boys and girls. But for me, you know, it all started because he was like, I'd really like to start this D3 program. And I was teaching culinary arts. And at that time, you know, I was just involved with too many things. And he said, hey, we're going to start this program. And for me, it was like, this is an opportunity to make sure something really works out well. What ended up happening is just the team itself, you know, our first year, we just had a bunch of ragtag 10, 11 guys, and we just played and had a blast. You know, I think we had like 13 wins and probably like 18 losses. But the recruiting class, because of having a school like Nazareth up in the Northeast there, you know, we had 10 kids wanting to come in, and, you know, instantly we had a great bunch of guys. They're all volleyball background, very academic, and, you know, it just took off. And I think that's, you know, that's going to happen wherever you are. And for us, it was really easy because it was a beautiful school. The athletic director was a full volleyball person. And it, you know, it really isn't that hard to get good volleyball players because I don't think there's, you know, enough places for them to go play as it is. So, I mean, it was an easy thing for us, you know, and we've just been blessed ever since.
If you build it, they will come. That seems to be the story time and again when it comes to men's volleyball throughout the United States. I did have a question about...
I can tell you this, that last year after we got to the Final Four, we probably had a dozen emails from kids from California. And the one really unique thing that happened for us, which is kind of funny, is we got a kid from the Valley, came out here, kid that played for SMBC. His parents came out here and they said, if our neighbors knew that this school existed, you guys would be, you know, just overcrowded with West Coast volleyball players just because of the campus where you are up on the Great Lakes. So it's kind of funny that it happened that way all because of that first championship. These kids that we call are just kind of like, well, you're in New York, it's a little cold. After that, it's just, you know, we no longer have a problem or an issue.
It certainly is a unique thing. You can offer sort of another experience for kids from California looking for something different than what they've had out here. You mentioned a little bit about getting some interest from last year's Final Four, and I wanted you to talk about this year's team, some of the individuals on the team. In light of the fact that last season you made your first Final Four, but people may not know that you were the 15th seed in the 16-team NECVA tournament last year, and you won four straight upsets to get yourself to the Final Four. It was just a huge surprise, and I wondered if that was kind of a signal or a mental shift for your team, knowing they could beat anybody in the playoffs.
Well, first of all, that year, like, you know, you can imagine playing in the Mountain Pacific, we had three really unique injuries. So, first of all, the year started, we could never get, you know, we had 12, 13 guys that were playing, winning, losing. We'd beat the fourth seed or the eighth seed in the country, and then we'd lose like five or six straight. The point was, is by the time we got to that NECVA tournament, you know, everybody got healthy. We were a good team, but, you know, we just hadn't played together. And then, fortunately, when we took that 16-team draw, that's how weird our little conference was, we played three teams that had never played us. So it was great. It was like, we're in our best shape. We just went out there and did business and won that tournament. We didn't play anybody until the finals that had played us. And then by then, we were on a roll. So it's kind of like, you know, it was perfect timing for us. So, you know, it worked out really well. We saw success, and then, you know, we headed out to the Final Four, even though after that weekend, you know, we only had 4 days to rest, so it was pretty brutal. But it was great, and, you know, we made a good run. It looked worse than it was. I think in that tournament, we'd have probably been the fifth or sixth seed, but that 15th seed we'll never forget.
So who are the players this year that you felt really made a difference down the stretch? Obviously, it's a team game, but there are always those players that step up playoff time and make a big difference.
Well, I mean, after last year we didn't get an award, even in our own conference. So it was kind of funny. We didn't get our own conference. You know, nothing really worked out in the All-American side. So we're one of those humbled group that always just – and that's one of the things that as we developed this identity we had this year, it's like, hey, people aren't going to know who we are, or we might not get this, but we'll savor the moment. And this year when we started out with that group, you know, there was a lot of contributors. And we had about six, seven guys make all-tournament team player of the week. And, you know, then we had four players that became All-Americans. But the thing was, there was guys that just didn't get noticed that were just, you know, swinging 478 for the year. I mean, imagine that. I mean, so it was, you know, there's some key players on this. You know, Hans Schroeder, who is a kid from Buffalo that's played 4 years for us, you know, he's just always been a straight-laced, you know, rip-em-up guy, scores big, plays big all the time. Billy DeMello, a kid from Long Island for us, you know, the other things he did were far better. It's his second time he was an All-American. He was the All-Tournament team. But, I mean, this kid at 6'4 is passing the rock so we can run an offense. You know, another kid that was really stable for us was our setter, which I think was one of the best setters absolutely in the country. And he's a little squeak. He's only about 5'11". He's an upstate New York guy from Midlakes, E.J. Wells Spicer. So, I mean, those three guys were dominant at their positions. We had the player that was middle. We probably say he had the kill percentage, you know, highest in the country. His name was Ellis Walsh, a big physical kid. So those guys were lucky enough to get All-American. But probably one of the best players in the country, he didn't get recognized in our own conference or as an All-American. He hit, I think, 680 this weekend. His name's Rob Kraft. He's from New Jersey. And, I mean, I don't know that there's a kid better than him. But it's, you know, it's been a team effort. And that's the big thing for us. If some of these guys didn't get recognized, and they just made our team deeper. I mean, we were definitely not one of those teams that had, oh, there's two, three guys to stop them. If you played us and you were Springfield or Carthage, it was the middles that beat you, then it was the outsides that beat you. And, oh, by the way, these guys pass at a 2-3, so now they run an efficient offense. So we were a real successful team. I think we won 9-5 gamers. We didn't lose any. And we won like 22 or 23 in a row. But we're playing Division III teams until the championship weekend, which we played Carthage and Springfield. And fortunately, it just kept getting better. So it was good, but it was definitely a team effort.
Very good. Yeah, Robert Kraft, 14 kills, one error in 19 attempts. And Hans Schroeder, you also mentioned, takes home the most valuable player after getting 15 kills in the title match and 18 on Friday's five-set semifinal over Carthage. Cal, we appreciate you spending the time here. Cal Wickens is the head coach at Carthage, or at Carthage, at Nazareth. Sorry, doing five different things here, Cal. He's his team had 22 wins to end the season and a 31-3 overall record and took home the national championship there first in the seventh year of the program. Cal Wickens, thanks so much for spending time here on the show with us.
Absolutely. Appreciate being there, guys. Enjoy that warm weather.
Yeah, we will. Get out your shovel. Thanks, Cal.
Thanks.
Cal, I like him.
He's good. I mean, he's a guy who's getting it done at that level. I mean, he's talking about being on the furthest outpost of volleyball. And really, D3 is that. It's kind of like junior college where I played for a couple of seasons. You're on the edges of what's really happening in the sport, but it's its own little world. And a lot of you very unique, dedicated people, I think, exist in that space.
Well, that's the irony. People that are there at that level are there because they really want to do it.
One of the interesting things he mentioned there is something I've experienced too with a team I played on in Belgium, a professional team that we did take home two championships inside the country and finished second in Europe. An incredible year for that squad. But we had the same thing. We had 8-5 set matches and we won every single time. We felt if we could get it to five games, we owned you in the fifth game for sure. And Cal said his team had 9 5-game game matches and won all of those. And that's one of those situations where you feel really good about the guys you're putting out on the floor every time they're out there.
And that's what kept Flexol in business, is all those 5-game matches for you.
Hey, this was early in my career. I actually felt pretty good back then.
Yeah.
All right, Matt Boyce. It's been a show. It's been a good show. It's been a great show. It's your first show. How are you feeling?
I feel good. I prepped and I stuck to my guns on what I was going to do and what I was not going to do. Discipline's a hard thing for me, but I think with support from yourself and Chris remotely,
I feel pretty good about today. It's something to build off of, and expectations will be high going forward.
That's right. Every call now, people will be hanging on your every word. We've got a couple of good shows coming up the next few weeks. Geeter will be back here in studio. DJ Roche will be back. And Reed, hopefully, will be winning some more playoff games and still be over there in Russia. We appreciate you being here and being part of the show. If you want to email us at thenetlive@gmail.com or friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/thenetlive. Get in the conversation. People have been posting stuff there. We really appreciate it. There's been a lot of topics pop up there on the Facebook page. We want you to bring it to us. More things for us to talk about inside the sport and also as it relates to the sport, to the greater world, as we try and view not everything through the prism of volleyball, but several things. So my thanks to Chris Geeter McGee for being here, Rick Donitz from Dig Pink for coming on, Albie Hanneman, thanks a lot for being here, Cal Wickens, and of course our sponsors, Volleyball Magazine. We appreciate the support there. Support we've gotten from Mikasa in the past and Zamps. All good sponsors trying to make this show happen every week from California. So I'm Kevin in the studio. He's Matt Boyce on the phone. Matt, thanks a lot for the efforts. We sure appreciate it.
Cheers.
See you again next week. The Net Live, we are out.